Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I mean, what's more football focused doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Palazzolo back here with Sam Monson. Appreciate everybody being here on Monday morning, live on YouTube, as always. How you doing, man?
Good. You?
Great. It's your last show for weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Like six shows.
I mean, yeah.
You've never missed that many in a row. It's like the first, you're almost Cal Ripken. Yeah. Iron Man Street.
Well, that's because, yeah, basically since moving over here, there's been no kind of vacation slash holiday time at all.
Now you're just gone.
Pandemic, sort of that in a large extent.
So you're going to miss six straight shows or whatever it is. I've got some plans.
Yeah.
With you gone.
Okay.
We do have Rick Spielman on the show.
You're going to stage a coup, take over, run this thing the way it should be run.
Yeah. We'll do a bunch of monologues. I keep saying I'll have guests, but maybe it'll just be me.
You reading a book?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's see how that goes.
No, it'll be me, Rick Spielman, this week. So if anybody has any questions for Rick Spielman, former GM of the Minnesota Vikings, Greg Rosenthal from around the NFL, we'll have our guy Trevor Sikkema in studio for a little positivity on one show and figure out the last couple along the way there. Before we get going, so we're going to do a charity drive for You Throwing 60. We've had a few emails of people kind of giving their take on whether or not you can hit 60 miles an hour or not.
Okay.
Comparing to their own high school days. I've seen an email for that.
Brent Rollins, messaged me on Twitter.
Yeah.
With his son, who is now 14. Now, at 14, he's got some heat. But at 12, he was throwing 62. If a 12-year-old can throw 62, I can throw 60.
Yeah, I don't think
I don't care how good the 12-year-old is. I don't care. He can be the next who's the best pitcher in baseball. He can be that guy at 12. I don't care. He's 12. 12 years old. That's all I care about.
That's gas at 12.
I'm sure it is. But it's 12. If I can't outthrow a 12-year-old, what's the point?
Albert Pujols, who's our age.
I saw that. That was miserable looking.
Is out there. I mean, he didn't look like he was trying to throw that hard. He knows.
He also doesn't look like he's our age.
So,
look,
yeah.
You and I are both carrying some extra poundage these days, right? We're not Albert.
Albert looked older than he was when he broke in at whatever, 21 years old or
right.
Whatever he was. So, you know, that's happened before, you know? My roommate added 4 years overnight once they discovered his real age one time. Went from 19-year-old prospect to 23-year-old. Uh-oh, you're too old.
Yeah.
You're too old for A-ball. So, yeah, maybe Pujols is 48, whatever he is. But he's still a major league pitcher or player.
No.
Pitching off the mound, throwing in the 60s.
I mean, sort of. Like, look, he's some sort of legacy, you know.
He's still playing.
I know, but why? Like, as you know, Steve, don't watch a ton of baseball, but I've seen quite a bit of Albert Pujols' highlights this year. And it's like, what is happening here? Why is this guy allowed to play a professional sport?
Again, he's in our age range.
Yeah.
And coming from a much higher baseline.
Sure.
Of athleticism.
He's also let himself go a lot more than we have.
Guy in the chat could throw 70 when he was 12.
I'm just saying. If a 12-year-old can throw that, I'm just saying. It's not. Not having it.
All right. Well, anyway, we're gonna let Sam try to throw.
So anyway, listen, what we'll do is we will decide on the charity after I'm back. So people keep contacting us, email in nflpodcast@pff.com. Tell us where we should donate money next time. What I do want to do, though, is show you that we are raising money on this road trip that we're on, right?
Oh, yeah.
So nice. We're working with Advent Health's foundation that raises money for men's health and men's cancers, those kinds of things. We have a little graphic that Tyler knocked up much to or using my direction. I'm sure he's not happy about it, but I gave him some little pointers, little fixes. So drivemenshealthforward.com is the website address that all this, where you can donate money and raise cash. But in the bottom left there, you'll see the social media accounts that we'll be using to fire out like updates along the way, right? We're going to take a ton of video, a ton of pictures, all those kinds of things. We're going to end up with like a 10-minute video at the end of this whole thing. So my Instagram, Samuel Monson, my Twitter account, there's a dedicated TikTok for the JAG. Monson Road Trip is it on TikTok. And then, you can follow us the whole way. We'll be throwing up a whole bunch of content. Took me a good couple of seconds there where Tyler sent me this image to realize that in the picture I wasn't wearing a sweatband. That's the rear mirror of the car.
Oh, yeah, that's what it did look like.
Right?
Yeah, it looked
confused me for a little bit.
Looked like you had a little headband going.
But, yeah, so we'll be posting all kinds of updates. And if we could raise money for men's health and cancer charities, that would be awesome. So that's my pinned tweet right now. So @PFF_Sam, you can find the link or drivemenshealthforward.com and help us raise some cash for a good cause.
Who's running the TikTok, you or your dad?
I think I'm running all of this stuff. I don't know how media savvy he is, social media savvy. I mean, he can tweet and stuff.
I think you give him the reins, man.
And in recent years, he's become very attached to emojis. You know, like he'll send WhatsApp messages with just a million emojis attached to them.
Yeah.
Which is really the hallmark of being old at that point.
That's what my six-year-old does.
Yeah. I think a lot of this is going to fall on my shoulders. And then at the end of this, we'll have like a 10-minute video of the disaster mashed together and see what that looks like.
Well, that's great. Be sure to follow Sam and Dr. Monson out on the road at @PFF_Sam, his pinned tweet. So for today, we're gonna go through each team. It's going to have to be rapid fire, Sam. You know how we do. Biggest off-season additions for all 32 teams. Before we get into it, though, the podcast is sponsored by Sunday, even on Monday morning here. Does your lawn have weeds, bare patches, or pet spots, Sam? Yours might do. Sunday can help you solve these problems and more the easy way. They've got everything you need from fertilizer to seeds to weed control, and it's all delivered right to your door. Sunday can help you grow a beautiful lawn without the guesswork or the nasty chemicals. Their custom plans include fertilizer and everything you need to easily care for your lawn so you can feel good with kids and pets around. I think I'm going to get after it this week. Finally going to apply this. I think the lawn's ready. There's a specific time frame. You know, you got to cut it, you got to water it and all that stuff before. But then it's as easy as 15 minutes, a ready-to-use pouch in your garden hose, and you spray it. That's all it is, 15 minutes. I was asking you off-air, because we ask questions about each other's lives. I said, how's your lawn looking? And you said, looks great. Just telling people about the story. Looks great. You already used it. So Sunday's offering our listeners 20% off. Full-season plans start at just $129. You get 20% off at checkout when you visit getsunday.com/NFL pod. It's getsunday.com/NFL pod. 20% off your custom plan. Getsunday.com/NFL pod. All right, man, you ready to get into it?
Yeah.
As always, I overreact to the most recent complaints that have sent to me. Perfect. So there are fans from the West who listen to us.
The West.
From the West. And so you always put the West last.
We didn't last time, right? Me and Austin did.
I think it was the AFC. I forget who it was. But anyway, we're going to go west to east today. Anyway, I try to mix it up as it is. So we're going to start with the NFC West.
You cut out the part of the message where the guy said he was taller than I was at 12.
Yeah.
Also pretty.
So?
I'm just saying. That's all right. It's fine.
Early bloomers. There's a lot of those early bloomers.
That's a big 12-year-old. I mean, again, assuming.
Oh, it's a monster 12-year-old. I wasn't even that monstrous.
That's what I'm saying. 5'11". If you're taller than 5'11 at 12 years old, you're a freak. It's as simple as it is.
Freak.
Freak.
Some people would say you're 5'6", but, you know.
Some people would be wrong.
It's a whole different story. All right, we're going to go through the biggest offseason addition, however you want to define that. Biggest offseason addition for each
so
team.
So what insane order are you doing?
We have a document.
Yeah.
It'll be by division, so there will be timestamps at some point that will give you each of these teams. But there's a document. So I just put NFC West in no particular order within the division.
Wonderful. So this is...
just follow the document that I sent you, and we'll go team by team.
Okay.
Starting with the Seattle Seahawks, of course.
Naturally.
In the NFC West. Sam?
Yeah?
The biggest offseason addition for the Seattle Seahawks. Good answer.
Honestly, it's probably like Noah Fant.
Noah Fant?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying, look what they've done.
Nobody in the draft. Nothing.
I mean, Charles Cross, maybe, but like Noah Fant is a, you know, legit receiving option, might have a bigger impact than Charles Cross.
It's not Drew Lock.
No. There's this talk he might not even win the job. Geno Smith's going to be the starting quarterback for Seattle.
Geno knows the system.
Yeah.
You see.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree it probably isn't Drew Lock. Is the biggest... Do we make this biggest addition or just biggest move? Because obviously the biggest move is trading Russell Wilson.
No, you made this bad. You got to lie in it now. The first team has no useful addition whatsoever.
I'll say Charles Cross.
Useful's harsh. No amazing needle-moving addition.
It's another one of those spread the wealth type of moves, right? We got to replace Russell Wilson in the aggregate, which involves several draft picks, two new starting tackles, both from the draft, most likely.
The flaw with that plan when it comes to quarterbacks is you can't really platoon at quarterback.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Well, the aggregate of Drew Lock plus all the other draft picks that they got, which involves Charles Cross in particular, you know, Abe Lucas being at right tackle, just all of these players being added up to try to replace Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the offseason for them is a massive net loss, because you lose Russell Wilson, you cut Bobby Wagner, DJ Reed signed somewhere else. Like, you lost some serious players, of course.
Both starting tackles.
Yeah, the most important of which being the quarterback that's dragged this team single-handedly to success in recent years. And your replacement for that has been Drew Lock. And, you know, Noah Fant, Shelby Harris, Austin Blythe, like, a lot of people added, but I don't know that can be anything other than a pretty serious step backwards.
All right, so I'll go with Charles Cross as the biggest addition.
All right.
Because he's their first-round draft pick, number 9 overall, top tackle on the PFF draft board. And with other teams, it's going to be more obvious. With Seattle, it does feel like, even though, you know, I liked their draft, it does feel like they're in the middle of a rebuild when you look at what they had on their roster last year and what they're going into this year.
Yeah.
And it's tough to say Drew Lock's even the biggest offseason move. Let's go to the Los Angeles Rams. The Super Bowl champions, their biggest off-season addition. Do you want to start this or do you want me to start this? What's best for you?
I don't care.
Okay, you
whatever
go.
You want to do. It's Allen Robinson.
Ah, yeah. It is Allen Robinson. I forgot about him for a second. I wrote down Bobby Wagner. I was like, wait a second. They did some other stuff, too. I mean, the Rams... They lost some pieces as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue that this one is a lateral move as well. I mean, they trade away Robert Woods and bring in Allen Robinson to replace him.
You lose OBJ technically right now. You trade Robert Woods, but Allen Robinson comes in and is probably a better all-around receiver than both.
I mean, Allen Robinson is a really exciting addition that is kind of flying under the radar a little bit this offseason because he's coming off a bad year. But it's like his first bad year in the NFL. And the dude has never had a good quarterback. Never. Never. I'm talking all the way through college, all the way through the NFL, maybe high school as well, if you start looking at some of those numbers. The man might never have had high-level quarterback play, and he's been a consistent top 10 receiver in the NFL despite that. Has one bad year, and it's like everybody forgot Allen Robinson can play. But he's not, like, old. You know, Allen Robinson is still in his prime. There's no reason that he couldn't still be legit. He's 28 years old, and he now goes to a team whose offense is cooking, who just had a quarterback who took the team to the Super Bowl in the postseason. this should be a really exciting addition.
Yeah, Allen Robinson is one of those guys that the highlight reel stuff might make it feel like he's this just catch point winner, contested catch type of guy, but he's a good route runner. I mean, he really can do it all. He can definitely win down the field, and if anything, it's going to add a little bit of help for Cooper Kupp, who was unstoppable last year. So, yeah, I'll agree with Allen Robinson. I think Bobby Wagner, probably second on that list, right, even in his age, even at a position that the Rams have devalued. You're losing the star power of Von Miller now that they used on their Super Bowl run, and we'll see if Wagner, now they're going with Aaron Donald, Bobby Wagner at the second level at linebacker, and then Jalen Ramsey in the secondary, one of those put a star at every level type of strategies, and we'll see what Bobby Wagner has left. Still one of the best linebackers in the NFL.
Yeah.
But he has to be up there as well. But I'll go with Allen Robinson as well because we're going with the biggest offseason addition. Let's go Arizona Cardinals. Who's the biggest offseason addition for the Cardinals?
I mean, it has to be Marquise Brown, right?
That's my initial thought. Yeah. It's your first round pick this year.
Right.
And Kyler's buddy.
Yes.
It's both a short and long-term play here.
Yeah, their second-round pick was Trey McBride, and he might be a big addition as well, but he's coming into a pretty crowded room already in terms of Zach Ertz and Max Williams, who were both re-signed at the tight end position. I suggest that Trey McBride being drafted in the second means that Max Williams' role in this offense dramatically diminishes, and he may end up being a short-term see-ya kind of candidate, but he's there at the moment. Marquise Brown comes in. DeAndre Hopkins is suspended for a few games, so he's immediately going to be the number one guy and a pretty consistent number one target, I would think. So, yeah, it's tough to find another addition that would rival that.
No, I think it's got to be Marquise Brown overall. With the investment, Kyler's buddy, the deep threat that you're adding there, they bring back A.J. Green. DeAndre Hopkins is going to be suspended for the first six games as of now. So there's a lot of pressure on everybody in Arizona, right? I mean, it's year four of Kyler Murray. He wants that big contract, all of that stuff. And Marquise Brown's going to be the guy to unlock that.
Yeah, I will say you can make an argument that a few of these other draft picks in the mid to low rounds could be a huge addition if they hit because they're at real positions of need. So, edge rusher for the Cardinals is all of a sudden a wasteland outside of J.J. Watt. They drafted a couple of those guys in the third round, Cameron Thomas from San Diego State, Majai Sanders from Cincinnati. If one of those guys hits, that's huge. Like, that's such an important thing for this team and this defense. But, third round edge rushers, it's not exactly the most likely thing in the world.
Yeah, that was my take on the Saints last year when they had Paulson Adebo, the corner last year in the third round. It's like, you're not usually not relying on third rounders, but when you have a huge hole at corner, we got to rely there. I think the Cardinals do have elements of that, right? Where these two third rounders, Cameron Thomas being really productive, Sanders really productive players, different types of players, but guys that have an opportunity to play.
And they grabbed a couple of offensive linemen in the sixth and seventh rounds as well. That again, there's like a pretty clear pathway through to playing time if one of those guys is unexpectedly a lot better than they think he is, and that could be huge, but wouldn't be more impactful than a Marquise Brown.
All right, wrapping up the NFC West here, San Francisco 49ers and their most important addition.
The San Francisco 49ers, did they do things this offseason?
Promoted Ward. Bobby Slowick? Did they promote him again? That should have been the Rams move, promoting Zach
SPFF
Robinson.
SPFF people.
Is it Allen Robinson or Zach Robinson that's the most important?
I mean, that's the question everybody is asking.
Who's the most important Robinson on the Rams?
Most important Robinson. I think it's probably Tre'Varius Ward.
That's what I went with.
But I could see an argument for Drake Jackson for similar reasons to Arizona. They obviously have Nick Bosa, so it's not a wasteland. But
Drake Jackson, a second-round edge out of USC.
Yes, pick number 61 overall. There's literally nobody in this draft that has the combination of bend around the edge, burst, that sort of the picture-perfect Robert Quinn, Von Miller speed rush around the outside that everybody looks for in the draft. Drake Jackson's is the best of anybody, like all the way up to the top of the draft. Better than Hutchinson, better than Trayvon Walker, better than Thibodeau. And they got him at 61 overall. Now, look, they got him at 61 overall because there's other issues, right? It's not like he's perfect. But that guy has the potential to come in there and be a D-Ford replacement for this defense and give you somebody opposite Nick Bosa, which, again, has real potential to be a huge move for them, but it's probably more likely Tre'Davious Ward.
We've seen the Niners defense at their best when they do have 6 and 7 legitimate pass rushers, which they did in their Super Bowl year in 2019. But I'm definitely going to go. I'll go with Tre'Davious Ward as well. Again, a guy that was sneaky good, man, for years with the Chiefs. You know, the size, physicality to play press man. I think he adds a little bit of flexibility to what they can do in the secondary. And the Niners haven't really invested a ton at corner over the last couple of years, right? They got Richard Sherman kind of on the cheap, and every year we're like, hey, you know, they're going to do enough at corner. They're going to, and they get by. And this was the first real big investment that they've made at corner. So I think, you know, Tre'Davious Ward being the most important offseason addition for the Niners makes sense. Let's go to the AFC West. So now we've got the Raiders up first in no particular order. Who is their most important offseason addition?
I think the most important is probably the new head coach, Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, this is, I mean, pretty healthy debate here between Josh McDaniels and, of course, the superstar player of Devontae Adams at receiver.
Yeah, like, so last season, the Raiders actually did remarkably well to make the playoffs despite everything that happened to them. Remember, they were in pretty good shape. The John Gruden email scandal, the Henry Ruggs accident and him getting kicked off the team and thrown in jail. This was a nightmare to navigate for Derek Carr in particular and the rest of that offense, and they held it together remarkably well. Now they get to start afresh. They get a new GM, a new head coach comes in, and McDaniels was the guy earmarked. And look, McDaniels has been kind of groomed. He's been set up as this guy that went away, did the head coach thing once, was an absolute train wreck, dumpster fire in Denver. And then he sort of sat on the sideline learning under Bill Belichick's tutelage to eventually, somebody assumed, take over and give it another shot, having learned all his lessons and figured out what went wrong and, you know, knows not to do it again. Well, now we're going to get to see. Because Josh McDaniels' Denver tenure, honestly, if you were trying to run a franchise into the ground, you wouldn't have done much different. Like, seriously, if you'd come in there and go, what can I do to throw this thing off a cliff as fast as I possibly can? You'd run pretty much what McDaniels did from a playbook standpoint. So he doesn't just need to, like, learn, you know, a couple of missteps in here. He's like, okay, I need to do the exact opposite of what I did the last time around and make sure that that doesn't happen again. So now we get to see what he can do with a team that's already in reasonable shape, which, again, that Denver team was as well, right? Remember, they got rid of Mike Shanahan because they were, like, tired of being reasonable.
Yeah, it's crazy to believe that to think that McDaniel's tenure there was 2009 and 10. What were you doing back in 2009? Just starting PFF?
Yeah.
Just starting here?
Yeah, still here.
I still had a mustache back then. I mean, it's just it was so long ago. It is, look, for biggest offseason addition, it has to be McDaniels, right? But Devontae Adams, in sticking with my whole offseason theme of these elite wide receivers moving and what we can learn from that. And, you know, if Derek Carr puts up MVP caliber numbers here, Sam, I mean, it's got to be Devontae Adams. I mean, you'll put some of that success, like some of that success will go to McDaniels, right? But it's got to be Adams, the guy that moves the needle there as far as taking this offense to the next level and in a division where you have to compete with the Chiefs, with the Chargers, and with Russ and the Broncos. So I'll go Devontae Adams here. But remember, we had that debate, right? It's like if you're starting a franchise, there's X number of quarterbacks you want to start with. There's a point where you don't necessarily want to take a quarterback first, though. There's a point where you want to take a head coach first. And I think you and I theorized it's probably after QB8 or so, right? But the receiver is probably right there as well, right? I mean, the impact of a head coach and a receiver, is it close? I mean, the head coach touches absolutely everything, but does it impact wins that much, despite them impacting everything from culture to offense, defense, and every single thing? I think that's a healthy debate as well. But yeah, I think the real answer in a lot of these cases has to be the new head coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a short versus long-term thing, I think. Like, Devontae Adams influences your chance of winning games now, you know, the
sure.
next game. You're way more of a chance of winning the next game with Devontae Adams on the roster than not. But Josh McDaniels is the guy that influences how many games you're going to win over the next couple of years or the next 5 years, or, you know, where the overall direction of the franchise, and then letting Davante Adams and Derek Carr cook on Sundays.
All right, so for the Raiders, Josh McDaniels, and maybe short-term Davante Adams. Let's go Denver Broncos. Also have a new head coach.
Yeah.
But they also have Russell Wilson.
Yes.
So is he above, is Russell Wilson above the threshold of he's more important than the head coach?
Absolutely. By a long way.
Agreed. So Russ is the most important addition for the Broncos.
Yeah. Easy one. I mean, it just is. It's Russ.
There's nothing Nathaniel Hackett was going to do with this roster.
No, the only thing Nathaniel Hackett could do was to woo the quarterback, right? We thought it might have been Aaron Rodgers when they signed Nathaniel Hackett in the first place. Oh, connection to Rodgers. Is he going to be the guy that gets him over? And then Rodgers ends up signing his extension with Green Bay, and the Denver ends up getting Russell Wilson. Like, Nathaniel Hackett's role was a conduit to the quarterback. That's how important the quarterback was.
And again, we've seen Tom Brady has gone on and won without Bill Belichick. We've seen Peyton Manning go on and win. We've seen Aaron Rodgers go on and win. Like, when you're above a certain threshold at quarterback, you're probably more important than the head coach, despite the head coach, again, touching everything in the organization, setting the culture, adding players, subtracting players, all of that stuff. The quarterback at that level is still the bigger driver.
And it's also, what is the head coach if he doesn't have a quarterback? Like, that's the other problem.
Right.
If you, a guy like Nathaniel Hackett might be an amazing head coach. The guy might be the next Bill Belichick. But if he never finds a quarterback that can get it done, it doesn't matter. He won't live to survive long enough to show that. Like, he'll be out. Like, you know, Bill Belichick didn't just step into a head coaching role and smooth sailing from then on in. The dude had to wait until Tom Brady stumbled, you know, fell into his lap. He made the decision, went with Tom Brady. But, like, that's what catalyzed Bill Belichick into being Bill Belichick.
So, Russ, the biggest offseason addition for the Broncos, Russell Wilson over Nathaniel Hackett. Of course, they made a bunch of other moves that were good, but nothing compares to adding Russell Wilson to the mix there. Let's go Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC West. This is an interesting one because they got rid of superstar Tyreek Hill, went with this idea of replacing him in the aggregate. Continue using that. So who's the most important Kansas City Chiefs offseason addition?
Well, it basically has to be the draft. I think it ends up being Sky Moore.
Yeah, I thought you might go that way.
I mean, Sky Moore, their entire draft was value picks. Now, you know, if you listen to the conversation we had with Dr. Eric Eager of the Forecast, there is an extent to which that might be just a fallacy. Generally, the idea that there is value and that just anybody... We love drafts where the consensus board or the PFF board is way higher on a player than the NFL was, right? So every pick made looks like a bargain. It looks like value. You stop the guy slide, so you get great value here. The Chiefs basically did that down the entire draft. So they were one of everybody's favorite drafts because everybody was higher on those players in the NFL. The data would say, like, there's a reason the NFL is lower on those guys than the consensus board. And maybe that's where the medicals or the character background stuff, the stuff that people don't have privy to when they're just watching tape, maybe that's where all that stuff comes in.
It's tough to properly project the draft. Right.
But the point generally being that there doesn't appear to be any such thing as bargains, which isn't to say that players don't dramatically outperform their draft position. It just means that there's no correlation between the difference between the big board, the consensus big board, and a draft position, like that value equating to a better player.
Right.
Right. So the Chiefs, the fact that they picked this group of players that look like great value, Trent McDuffie, 11 on PFF's board, 21 pick overall. George Karlaftis, 10 on PFF's big board, 30 pick overall. Sky Moore, 22 to 54, like all the way down. The fact that they've done that might not actually mean anything. But it really comes down to whether or not we're right about Sky Moore or not. And Sky Moore looks like he has first-round talent in a ton of different ways. He reminded me of Julian Edelman, and that feels like the kind of player where, I mean, the NFL was lower on Julian Edelman, right? The NFL did not pick Julian Edelman high. He goes on to have this career where at the end of it all, people are like, is Julian Edelman a Hall of Famer? Yes or no, the point being to go from where he was drafted to that conversation means he outperformed his draft position. Now, even if you redrafted and said, okay, if you pick Julian Edelman, pick number 54 overall, he's still value, right? So if Sky Moore can be that guy for the Chiefs, it's a huge boost and goes a massive long way to offsetting the loss of Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, I can see Sky Moore as the answer. I was going to go Marquez Valdes-Scantling just because it's really tough to project any receiver, second-round receiver, just jumping right in. So maybe, look, there's both short and long-term implications here. But I think Valdes-Scantling is going to get an opportunity to be a little bit more than just the deep threat. And the big question here, I can't wait to see, are the Chiefs trying to get Mahomes to play better within structure? Or are these guys going to have to play to Mahomes and play out of structure, right? I mean, that was part of what Mahomes and Kelce do so well, and what Mahomes and Tyreek Hill did so well. As much as Tyreek Hill is just going to like win his routes, they also knew how to play with Mahomes, you know, off script. Can these receivers do that? Can Valdes-Scantling do that? So it's like whichever receiver. For me, who's the most important one? Whichever receiver is going to be the best fit for Patrick Mahomes. Is it Sky Moore? Is it Valdes-Scantling? Is it Juju Smith-Schuster? Which guy is the best fit for Patrick Mahomes and his style?
Yeah, you're not going to get out of structure stuff out of Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's just who he is. Now, obviously, the debate when he was coming into the NFL was, can he do the in-structure stuff as well? He can. So
he's done that very well.
Right. So it's not like he's just that guy. But if you take that away from him, you are cutting off a giant percentage of what makes him Patrick Mahomes. And what made, you're right, the connection that he had with Tyreek Hill and with Travis Kelce in particular, it's so insane. When you watch the play break down, the way those guys are able to immediately go to where Patrick Mahomes knows they're going to be and find space. It's also one of those reasons where when they lose a player in the receiving core, it doesn't work quite as well because everybody has to shift roles. Nobody's quite sure where they're supposed to be in those situations. It's not like they don't know their role on a play. You know, they know the route they're supposed to be running. They know where they're supposed to be. But it's when that happens, right? When Mahomes rolls right randomly. Like, well, now, because the rules are different once you have to start.
Yeah, you could go back to the left because they'll throw a cross body.
Right. Once you have to start adjusting your route and scramble drill stuff, everything changes. So if you don't know that down, it causes problems. So they are going to need guys, I think, that can mesh with that. And it's very difficult, I think, to get an idea of whether that's going to work or not without seeing it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun year watching Mahomes play with a different group of players. And also, let's not, you know, the last time we saw him, it was one of the most disastrous second half collapses we've ever seen in NFL history. I mean, just legitimately, it was one of the worst second halves of football we've ever seen. Second halves of football. I mean, Mahomes was the first 10 quarters of Mahomes this postseason was on pace to be one of the best of all time. And the last two quarters are two of the worst we've ever seen. So it's a combination of all that's the most recent thing we've seen. There's a whole turnover in the receiving core. For me, it's which one of those guys emerges. I'll go with Marquez Valdes-Scantling. You mentioned Sky Moore, but either way, it's all the same thing. Whichever pass catcher meshes with Mahomes. All right, let's wrap up the AFC West with the Los Angeles Chargers. A lot of big offseason moves to choose from here.
Yeah. They do. I like the J.C. Jackson move.
Yeah.
I think that has a chance to really propel that secondary into somewhere pretty special. They already had the player, who's now number 3, apparently, not number 33. Changed number.
Hmm.
This whole new open season numbering rule thing.
Yeah.
Everybody can get any number.
Whatever number you want.
Whatever number.
What number would you be?
I would stick with a normal number.
What's your number? What's your ideal
number? My number was 24.
You're 24.
When I played receiver, I was 82. And then when I went to DB,
that's
it was 24.
Combination numbers there.
Yeah.
That's good.
But those are just like components of my birthday. They weren't particularly imaginative.
Mm.
Yeah.
I see. I'd be 50.
50?
Yeah.
That's a terrible number. Why would you be 50?
Well, it depends on what sport I'm playing.
Why would you be 50 in any sport?
It's a good number.
No, it's an awful. Who's the best 50 you can think of in NFL history? Right?
Hmm.
See my point?
Some linebacker.
There's not a single one. Can't think of a single good 50.
Had I gotten called up, I would have requested number 98 because that was the number I got to. When I sat in the bullpen in spring training, I was number 98. So I said I would stick with that. number 98. I'd be not 98.
You're like those players that, like, you know, I want to wear number 7 in honor of the 7 guys who were picked in front of me in the
draft.
Yeah,
yeah. I just remember small beginnings. Number 98.
Yeah.
Small beginnings ended up being my small ending, too. Anyway, Chargers, you're going J.C. Jackson.
Yeah.
I'll go Khalil Mack because, you know, an elite Khalil Mack, if he can get back on track just a little bit, he's still very good. But it's kind of like the Von Miller thing. What are you smiling at?
I'm just the idea of, like, hey, who's the best whatever you can think of off the top of your head, right? It's kind of like a cheat. Because you just put somebody in the spot, it's tough to think of something off the top of your head. Like, Mike Singletary is one of the best linebackers in NFL history, wearing number 50.
Yeah, I didn't think of him.
That's what I mean.
You know? Yeah, so you were wrong.
Well, I was just laughing.
Of course, there's been good 50s out there.
How easy
somewhere.
It is to manipulate somebody in an argument. Of course, you lose that when you then laugh about it.
I just didn't care that much.
Yeah,
just didn't care that much to fight for my good old number 50.
That's right. That's fine.
So I'm going Khalil Mack as the most important addition. 73 PFF grade last year. That's not in line with the rest of his career. But we've seen similar stuff from Von Miller, right? Where Von was slowly declining. It doesn't mean you're losing it completely. Khalil Mack still has a good enough track record that he could be back in that high 80s, low 90s range. And if he does that with Joey Bosa on the other side, dominant defensive frontier for the Chargers. So I'll say Khalil Mack. That's why they invested in him with the second round pick.
Yeah, and another player that has a real chance to impact the run defense as well, like, which was a real problem for the Chargers last season, even with the context of they probably want to be a little bit soft against the run or inviting run defense. You know, they went too far.
don't give up 200 a game.
Yeah.
And then you'll be all right. All right, before we get into the next divisions, the best place to play fantasy football this summer is Underdog Fantasy. Their Best Ball Mania tournament has $10 million in total prize money. And the best part is you just draft your fantasy football team and that's it. There's no waivers, no trades, no in-season management. Underdog gives you your best score each week of the season. The highest scores at the end of the year win. So this is a great time to get in and get your draft done because the champion of Best Ball Mania last year drafted in June. So there's no time like the present. Join Underdog and take your shot at $1 million draft. Plus, Underdog is going to double your first deposit. That's right. They're going to double your first deposit up to $100 when you sign up with promo code PFF. Also, if you play 10 of those dollars using promo code PFF, you get a free PFF subscription. That's right. What an unbelievable deal right here as we head into the summer. So what are you waiting for? Head to underdogfantasy.com or the App Store. Play $10 with code PFF and draft your Best Ball Mania team today. So you play a great fantasy game, you get a free PFF subscription, and you just set it and forget it as far as your lineup goes. I love it. So go check out underdogfantasy.com or go to the App Store. Promo code, of course, is PFF. All right, let's go to the NFC South. We're on to the Souths now.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa Bay Bucks up first in the random list that I made.
Yeah, of course.
Who's their most important offseason addition? Tom Brady?
I was going to say, am I allowed to say Tom Brady?
Well, I mean, they wooed a...
They added him from a point where he wasn't on the team.
Wooed a quarterback out of retirement.
Yeah, he was not on the team. He had retired. He was busy watching Manchester United play in England. And then it's like, oh, he's back. Yeah. So they got him back. That's an addition. Therefore, Tom Brady. No?
Feels cheating.
Not allowed? Okay.
Todd Bowles counts, even though he's been there, Todd Bowles to head coach.
Is that an addition?
Yeah, because you're adding him to a different... You're elevating him to a different role.
I'm not adding.
I mean, if I say it that way. You're adding him from defensive coordinator to... He moved offices.
Can't add somebody from something to something else. Like, that doesn't work. Sure, he's already there.
Biggest offseason elevation? Quick, Tyler, rename this thing. Offseason addition / elevation.
I will go with Luke Gadecki. The Central Michigan player, ooh, offensive lineman they drafted in the second round.
Second rounder.
Because that the hole on the offensive line, you know, Brady retires, immediately Ryan Jensen re-signs, but they lost both guards. Alex Kappa to free agency, Ali Marpet retired. They couldn't get him out of retirement. So that had the potential to cause problems on that offensive line, which, okay, Brady's got lightning-fast release, and they've got good players there. But you really don't want to have a couple of holes emerge on an offensive line with an ancient quarterback and the potential issues that can cause a guy like Gadecki. And when they were drafting in the first round, they traded out of it because there was that run on guards in the first round. The guys presumably they were looking for, the Zion Johnsons of the world, were not there. They trade out, and they end up getting Luke Gadecki lower down the second round. But that's they're going to need him to start. Like, that's the guy who needs to come in, be good, and solidify that spot.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, when going into the draft, we knew they had a spot to fill. So Gadecki being that guy, I think makes sense. I was going to go with Russell Gage just because he's their third wide receiver now, right? And they invested in him in the offseason, almost $10 million a year. And, you know, it's part of what went wrong last year was Chris Godwin getting hurt down the stretch, the poor game that they had against the Saints. Both Godwin and Evans went down in the same game. And last year at this time, we said, look, if the Bucs aren't going to make it, it's going to be they lose some sort of depth at receiver, secondary, maybe offensive line, and Russell Gage helps mitigate that, right? When he's on the field, it's like, wow, Russell Gage, their third option, pretty solid. One of the best third options in the NFL. And if guys get hurt, you feel a little bit better about him stepping in than, say, a Tyler Johnson, a Rashad Perryman, a Scotty Miller, the other guys that they have rounding out that roster. So I like the Russell Gage investment. Gadecki makes sense, though, too, because don't want to have any holes up front as far as the offensive line goes. How about the Atlanta Falcons, their biggest offseason addition? They've added a lot of big ones, size-wise, at receiver in particular.
They have.
I'm just fascinated by this strategy of a just monstrous pass catchers that they have. That's going to be fun.
The one, obviously, that has the potential to move the needle the most is if they end up hitting on Desmond Ridder. You know, they bring in Marcus Mariota. It's a stopgap, right? He's there to just make sure they have some sort of viable quarterback play until they clear the dead cap hit for Matt Ryan in particular. And they can sort of actually spend some money next season. But for now, he's just there to keep the lights on, keep things ticking over. But Desmond Ridder, third-round pick, this was a guy. I don't know what to make of the quarterbacks this year, right? Nobody loved them, but we all assumed they would kind of go in the first round anyway, two or three of them at least, and they didn't. We got one. We got Kenny Pickett in the first round, and people thought that was overdrafting, and then nobody else until a third. So what do you do with those quarterbacks now? Do you say, well, this is just who they are. They're not good. Forget about them, because third-round picks typically don't pan out. You hit on every now and again. A Dak Prescott shows up and is like, "Woo, we just missed." And immediately you knew it, right? Russell Wilson, same thing. These are guys that win that job in training camp, right? Ridder could be that guy. Ridder could come in, look ready day one, and immediately is pushing Marcus Mariota for that starting job. And if that happens, like nothing the Falcons did this offseason in a good offseason will affect it as much as that. Like if Ridder is good. Ridder isn't good, like it's irrelevant. He's just a backup, barely hear his name from here on in. And the biggest move they've made at that point probably becomes Drake Jackson.
Drake Jackson?
Drake London.
Drake London, right. I was going to say. Drake Jackson, biggest move for two different teams here for you so far. Yeah, I mean, I think if Ridder ends up hitting, certainly that trumps anything. I was going to go Drake London, of course, their first-round pick, in part because, I mean, they chose him among all the other receivers, right? They chose him over Garrett Wilson. They chose him over Chris Olave and Jameson Williams and all these other guys that we said, look, teams could have any of those top four guys as the number one receiver on their board. And the Falcons showed their hand because they picked first of all those receivers. They picked their guy, which was Drake London. So I think it's him. I think in the short term, though, Casey Hayward being added to that secondary with A.J. Terrell. If you're just talking some short-term improvement, what Hayward added last year with a 76 grade coming back and being one of the highest-graded corners once again after a down year in 2020, I mean, it's gonna make for a much better secondary in Atlanta in the short term. The most important one, though, I definitely think is Drake London, because that's what they decided they're gonna build their pass game around now with Drake London and Kyle Pitts. Let's go Carolina Panthers, their most important offseason addition. Same reasoning as Desmond Ridder. You have to go Matt Corral, right?
Yeah, it probably has to be. Like, Matt Corral is the one that determines whether people are keeping their jobs or not, essentially, right? They had...
You think so?
Yeah. If Matt Corral is not good this year, But if everybody in the building's getting fired.
No matter what happens with Sam Darnold, is there a chance if Sam Darnold plays below average or low 60s baseline, you know, career baseline, can they win 8 games?
No.
Okay.
Matt Corral, the only chance that the people currently in charge are still in charge next year is if Matt Corral is good and good kind of quickly.
Interesting.
So from that point of view, they had the number 6 overall pick. They didn't choose a quarterback. They didn't get any of the big-name quarterbacks in the offseason. They didn't mortgage the future for anything. They did nothing until Matt Corral was available at pick 94. They traded up and got him. At that point, Matt Corral is the guy that determines whether or not you're going to keep your jobs. Because this was like, it looked to me, I may be inventing this, but it looked to me like the entire offseason strategy was essentially the owner, David Tepper, saying, look, we're not mortgaging the future here to do something crazy at quarterback. We are going to do the sensible thing for the long-term health of this franchise, and I'm less interested in who is running the long-term health of this franchise, right? I will be here into the future. Doesn't really matter to me if other people are or not. So whilst you guys might want to do something nuts, you know, a massive crazy move or whatever to take your quarterback, I'm not interested in that. That makes Matt Corral so important for the people that aren't David Tepper, the people that don't have an ownership stake in the team.
I wrote down Matt Corral as well. But yeah, I mean, long term, if everybody does get fired and it's a new regime next year, then it's like Matt Corral doesn't matter a whole lot. They're going to get the next guy, and it's probably Ike Ekwonu because they picked he was the top tackle that they chose.
And they're kind of linked anyway because, I mean, I was saying all the way through the mock draft process, if you're not selecting a quarterback for Carolina at 6, you should be obligated to say, like, what is your quarterback plan, right? Because it can't be Sam Darnold. So that's what the Panthers ended up doing. They took Ike Ekwonu at 6. That was their one high-value draft pick. They grab a cornerstone left tackle, and they end up getting Matt Corral. That was their answer. But Ike Ekwonu will be forever connected to the fact that they passed on quarterbacks. So he needs to be good because that is what you gave up the chance to draft the most important position in the NFL. Now, you know, with hindsight, it's like nobody wanted these quarterbacks. So number 6 would have been a massive reach for whoever you picked. But that's the connection that he has, is that they chose him over a quarterback when this team desperately needed a quarterback.
Yeah, so I'll agree with you on Matt Corral, but I think we could be sitting here a year from now saying, yeah, who was the most important addition? It was just first-round pick, Ike Ekwonu, because he's more a part of this future. Because if Corral just ends up becoming a backup type as a third-rounder, then he's not. But for the regime and, you know, his competition with Sam Darnold, I'll go with Matt Corral as well. Rounding out the NFC South with the New Orleans Saints. Who's their most important offseason addition, Sam?
So I can't go with new head coach.
It's not the most important elevation here. No.
Right. It's correct. It's not him because he was only elevated.
It's not Dennis Allen?
No. It wasn't added. It was already there.
Yeah.
Can't be him.
Just switching offices doesn't count.
It's probably Chris Olave. This is getting pretty repetitive in terms of, yeah, it's their number one pick. Olave because
this is a great show. What are you talking about?
Olave because of how much they gave up to get him. Now, I would argue you can kind of separate that out a little bit and compartmentalize it and use the best ability of your cognitive dissonance to ignore a lot of the value you gave up. But if you do, take it in the whole.
Does Jameis should count here, right?
God, that's a terrible turn of phrase. Take it in the totality, take a holistic view of it as opposed to, you know.
Got it. Yeah, I got you.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Jameis should count here because he was a free agent, even though he was on the team last year, right? Jameis, can we get a ruling on Jameis counting?
No, because
he's a free agent. It's an off-season move, off-season addition.
Re-signing your own free agents?
Yeah. But it was after
they did
other stuff.
They did go a long time, yeah.
Right? They flirted with Deshaun Watson. They did some other stuff. I shouldn't have said that either.
We're going to need to cut the entire Saints section.
Use better words, Steve and Sam. They were, you don't want to say sweepstakes, you don't want to say anything. They investigated signing, and that's investigating is not good either.
No.
They considered signing Deshaun Watson, trading for Deshaun Watson.
Yes.
In New Orleans. And then they went back to Jameis. So Jameis kind of counts.
Okay.
It's either him or Olave, though.
Yeah. I mean, look, Jameis is massively important because he's their quarterback right now. Most important position, the guy they essentially decided to go with at that spot, admittedly only after they failed in getting Deshaun Watson. So, yeah, Jameis Winston is going to determine probably how good this team is right now. Chris Olave is important just because of the sheer value, the totality of what they gave up to get him, including those two trades, the one to get into the first round again this year and one to trade then up to get him at number 11 instead of sitting there where they were and see who was available. So when you add all that together, the volume of like trade collateral that Chris Olave cost this team is massive.
I got to go back and take a look at everything that they gave up for Marcus Davenport and then put that against PFF WAR and what they gave up and what they ended up getting back. I think that will be a fascinating case with Olave in a few years. And it's not necessarily like who was picked in lieu of him, but it's just what you would on average get from the four or five picks that you used to go get Chris Olave. If he becomes the next Michael Thomas, maybe you can justify it. But this is like the opposite of what the Chiefs just did, right? But the Saints are doing it with an unproven commodity, right? The Chiefs took a proven commodity in Tyreek Hill and said, we'd rather have five players. And the Saints, maybe not in one decision, but in multiple decisions, essentially said, in lieu of five players, we'll take one Chris Olave.
Yeah, the Saints have so the flip side of that idea of there's no such thing as value was there is such a thing as reaching, right? Like if you're doing the Mike Mayock draft every year, where you're like, I'm taking a guy 20 spots higher than everybody else has him, you're going to be wrong because the data says so. There is when it's one data point, right? The other way, at least 31 teams are passing on a guy before you take him. That is some sort of degree of wisdom of the crowds.
So technically there is value, though. There is value in taking someone in their expected range rather than reaching.
So when you're reaching, it's just one team's opinion, and the chances are that team is wrong. The Saints are interesting because they typically don't reach on players. They just trade to get that guy in his right range. So you're not taking a guy, you're sticking to the consensus opinion on a guy, but you're making the same logical leap in terms of I like our ability to evaluate this guy's talent better than everybody else. Except instead of disagreeing with everybody and saying, well, I think he's worth this much more, so I'm going to go up and get him 20 spots higher than you guys think he's worth. They're like, no, you guys are right as well. But we just think we're able to identify the talent better. So we're going to stick in his right range and just trade a ton to go get him. So it's this weird mix of the theory is the same, that they basically just value their opinion higher than everybody else's. But they're actually not deviating from everybody else's opinion. So they're still sticking with the wisdom of the crowds. It's just that they're increasing the amount it's costing them to make these draft picks.
That's the biggest thing to me, right? It's if it's the equivalent of four or five players, particularly on a team that likes to push the salary cap in the future, even though they're in a much better spot now. They spent a year to get back on track there. Sometimes those four and five players, most of the time, they're going to be more valuable than the non-quarterback. So if Olave hits, he's probably the most important one. Let's go with him. All right, let's go to the AFC South. Remember the Titans? They're first in the AFC South. Titans, most important player. And why is it Treylon Burks?
Because he's replacing the guy they traded away. So he is.
It's got to be Treylon Burks.
Well, I mean, it's Treylon Burks because he's got to replace A.J. Brown. Alternatively, you can look at it and say, well, if Robert Woods comes in there and becomes their number one,
true,
that's pretty important.
You could go Robert Woods. Robert Woods making over $16 million a year and, a track record as a high-end number two. This is not a knock on Robert Woods, but a high-end volume receiver, probably a top 32 receiver in the NFL, maybe top 20 at his best. Robert Woods is legit. And I think it, certainly in the short term, it's him. In the long term, though, I mean, you could argue that Treylon Burks has high upside, right? I mean, there's game speed that maybe didn't show up in the 40. There's ball skills. There's a lot to him. The Titans continue to add these. Last year's Caleb Farley, A couple years ago was Jeffrey Simmons. They're adding these high-ceiling type of players. So I'll go Treylon Burks as the most important one, but Woods certainly could trump that for this year because he probably comes in as the number one target here for Ryan Tannehill.
Burks also has that. He fits into the mold of, you know, the dudes thing. Like, he's got the kind of ability to just take over a game and just and wreck players that aren't as big, strong, and fast as he is. As much as, okay, the 40 time versus play speed thing, I mean, his play speed is faster than his 40 time, whatever the 40 time is. So there's not that many guys that can live with that level of physicality, of just physical tool set. And that was the same with A.J. Brown. That's been the same with Derrick Henry. Like, those are the guys that they've been relying on to carry this team. Burks has got more work to do. It's not as easy to find a role for him as it was with A.J. Brown, but he has that ability to take over a game just from a physical standpoint.
All right, let's go. So I agree. Treylon Burks trying to replace A.J. Brown. Jacksonville Jaguars, most important offseason addition.
I mean, it's probably Trayvon Walker, given the number one pick debates. Jacksonville had the number one overall pick in the draft. That, for most teams, doesn't come along that often.
Are you choosing him over Doug Peterson?
So Doug Peterson's, yes, because Doug Peterson's importance is simply not being Urban Meyer.
Oh, I mean, that's pretty important.
But that's the biggest subtraction, not addition. It's addition by subtraction. The fact that it was Doug Peterson is almost irrelevant to
I mean, you want to be better than Urban Meyer, and, you know, most hired head coaches will be historically.
And that didn't even, like, happen during the offseason. They booted him during the season.
Yeah, but they added Doug Peterson.
No, I know. But, like, the addition was getting rid of the guy that was just blowtorching your franchise.
So I would go Doug Peterson just because you don't just need him to not be Urban Meyer. That's, like, the baseline of expectation. Don't be Urban Meyer.
Mm.
But Doug Peterson has to be the guy to get the best out of Trevor Lawrence, right? He's got to be the guy. He's got to create the environment, create the culture. He's a former quarterback who's worked with Carson Wentz, almost got an MVP caliber season out of Carson Wentz, however you want to, you know, assign credit, blame, whatever, for Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson and their relationship and all that stuff. But Doug Peterson's the most important person. And the Jags have spent a lot of money. They added number one overall pick Trayvon Walker in a huge decision to take him over, you know, other players that, you know, were more expected, you know, expected to go number one overall. So I'll go Doug Peterson here.
He also becomes hugely important because they didn't, I mean, they've added pieces to the offense, but the offense is still not good on paper. Like, you look at the receiving core, for example. Hey, Trevor Lawrence, big year two for the greatest prospect we've seen since Peyton Manning. What does he have to work with? Well, Zay Jones, Marvin Jones Jr., Christian Kirk, Laquon Treadwell, LaViska Shenault, Dan Arnold. Like, this is not the group that you would put around a quarterback heading into a huge year two to be, you know, amazing. Same with the offensive line. Like, hey, what's his offensive line look like? Well, we gave Cabin Robinson the bag. Then we got Ben Bartsch, Brandon Scherff, Juwan Taylor, you know, Walker Little. Like, this is not a great group of offensive linemen to put in front of him either.
At least they invested in Scherff, who immediately steps in. He's their best offensive lineman. When you do look at that receiving core, though, like, again, going back to the Chiefs discussion, like, if this is this much different than what the Chiefs are trotting out as a receiving core?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes.
Marvin Jones. I mean, think for a second here. Uh-huh. Valdez-Scantling, Juju. Sky Moore's a rookie. He's an unknown, as much as you love him. And Mecole Hardman. Versus...
Wait. And Travis Kelce.
I'm just talking receivers. I know, yeah, Travis Kelce's. I'm not talking all pass catchers here.
But you need to for the Chiefs. Like, Travis Kelce, a lot like Kyle Pitts, is basically their number one receiver.
I understand. I'm just looking at the receiving core for now, though, because the Chiefs made a decision to lose a Tyreek Hill in lieu of three other actual wide receivers.
But they can only do that because you have a Travis Kelce there. Like, if Travis Kelce didn't exist and it was Tyreek Hill plus the other guys, I don't think they'd have made the same decision.
I know. I'm just trying to isolate this one position group for now.
But that
because
make sense.
I think the point I'm trying to make here is the Jags went out and got Christian Kirk, went out and got Zay Jones, spent a lot of money to do it, and I think they only landed at a spot where the Chiefs kind of got to reluctantly, is my point. You know, like the Chiefs kind of downgraded to their receiving core, whereas I think the Jags are kind of upgrading to, you know, spend all that money on Christian Kirk, who's, I don't know, did he make our top 32 receiver list? No, I don't think he's going to.
Yeah.
Zay Jones had a second half breakout last year. Marvin Jones is really good and solid, but getting old. It just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the other way of looking at it is the Chiefs traded away one of the best receivers in the game, replaced him with a second-round pick and a couple of mid-round or mid-price free agents, and still have a better receiving core than the Jags, who gave a lot of money to Christian Kirk and Zay Jones.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is they haven't done a good job of building around Trevor Lawrence so far, which is the point.
All right, so Trayvon Walker for you. I'm going to go Doug Peterson, most important. Off-season edition.
I meant to ask you, so where do you stand on the conspiracy theory / rumor that the Jags, what's the best way of phrasing this, induced the lawsuit from their kicker in order to be able to fire Urban Meyer for cause?
Oh, yeah, I'm all in on that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I like that as a theory.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Well, why wouldn't you? Because you're getting sued by the guy.
No, that's the way to do it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Look, we made a really bad financial investment. Let's try to get out of it. And if we lose a little bit more money along the way, like, you know.
Well, also, if you were, you know, if it was arranged, you could have like a predetermined, you know, settlement, essentially. Like, hey, you file a lawsuit, you sue us, you know, here's what we'll give you for it. When we settle, this
like
is the number.
It's like an AEW storyline here.
Yeah, like write it down a bit of paper, slide it across the table. Like, that's the number we'll settle for. And then we get to get rid of the guy that's killing us.
I hadn't heard that, but yeah.
It's great, though, isn't it?
Definitely makes sense. And, yeah, Urban Meyer, former AEW superstar. So
it's true.
You know,
by far his pro-career highlight.
It really was. That was, like, he was kind of bad.
And he didn't
segment.
Do anything. Yeah, and he just sort of stood there.
That was definitely the best thing he did as head coach.
Handed somebody his laptop, right?
Yeah.
That was all he did.
Charlie Strong did more work.
True.
In that, which was pretty telling. I think. Pretty telling.
Should have been a red flag.
Right? Of the Jaguars' regime in Urban Meyer's tenure there. AFC South, we're continuing. Indianapolis Colts. Matt Ryan.
Yeah, has to be.
Next.
Pretty much.
Now, so have we given the Colts enough love lately? I talk a lot about the Colts.
Lately?
I feel like I'm like, I don't know. Colts are one of my favorite teams to talk about for whatever reason.
Other candidates. Alec Pierce is important because he gives them that second receiver outside of Michael Pittman. Bernard Raimann is really important. They essentially may have drafted a starting left tackle in, what did they get, in the third round?
Yeah.
Those are two very important players. But
no, I agree with both of those. I mean, for this year, of course, it's Matt Ryan, right? I mean, he should upgrade, maybe not drastically, but upgrade over what they had with Carson Wentz last year. I think receiver, I mean, tackle's been a two-year issue, so adding Raimann makes sense. And adding receivers in general. If Pierce hits, man, with his explosiveness opposite Michael Pittman, that's huge. I still don't love the Colts receiving core on paper, but they did make some moves to try to make it better. So Pierce could be that guy. But I'll definitely go Matt Ryan as the most important Colt offseason addition, and then the Houston Texans to round out the NFC South. Who's the most important Texan offseason addition?
Have you got a good one for this?
I was going to go Derek Stingley.
Derek Stingley.
Yeah. I mean, again, their first-round pick, it was the first aggressive move. It was the first player that wasn't a backup, essentially, that they've added over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It has to be Stingley. Like, I mean, he's the first pick that will somewhat define Nick Caserio's tenure there in Houston.
Not even the first draft pick, but the first move. I mean, the first addition, the first significant addition, the first move that will define his tenure is trading away Deshaun Watson. The first addition after that, yeah, was Derek Stingley at number 3 overall. So, yeah, I guess it probably is him. Kenyon Green is a pretty significant one. More, not even so much like what Kenyon Green does, but like the opportunity cost of taking a guard at 15. Like that'll be one where, you know, Kenyon Green, whatever he does, people are always going to kind of have their eye on the next 10 players in that draft. Like, all right, whatever Kenyon Green does, like, what do the next 10 guys do? Because if one of those pops huge, it's like, should we have taken that guy instead of a guard at 15?
Yeah. I mean, again, picking a guard in isolation feels safer. Like you're not trying to hit a home run. You're just trying to grab a starter. And I don't hate that as a strategy when you have two first-round picks. But if you're the Texans, I'm also tempted by trying to hit a home run with both picks, Derek Stingley, and then at number 15. So I'll say Stingley's most important, but I think you're right as far as Kenyon Green and taking him at 15 and then, you know, what is coming after that down the route, down the road in the draft for the Texans. Let's go NFC North. Chicago Bears, biggest offseason addition.
The new GM.
Ryan Poles.
Yes.
That was my answer. Now, I went Doug Peterson for the Jags. Obviously, they didn't switch GM as well, but why not Matt Eberflus, head coach?
Because Ryan Poles appears to be the guy taking charge, taking point on what the direction is right now. How are we rebuilding this thing? The Bears were not in a great situation in terms of cap space, in terms of overall roster health, and they had Justin Fields. So there's huge arguments, you know, in Bears fandom right now about what is the strategy been for building around Justin Fields. Do they believe in him? Do they not? What have they been doing? Right now, Ryan Poles is the guy making all those moves. He has been the one determining where we've been allocating resources, where we've been putting the small amount of value picks that we have. So far, they haven't been a ton around Justin Fields.
Completely agree. It's Ryan Poles. They did draft 11 times. They came in low on draft capital, maneuvered the board quite a bit. I know six of those picks were in rounds 6 and 7, but it's the type of thing the Bears need to be doing right now, right? I mean, a lot of the offensive linemen that they took were late. If you hit on a couple of those, credit Ryan Poles, right? I mean, you're taking this roster that had, as you just mentioned, cap issues, talent issues, and trying to get it back on track. I think that all comes down to Ryan Poles. I would take, if they had hired an offensive head coach, I think the narrative would be more, hey, it's the offensive head coach, right? If they had hired Doug Peterson, it's like, well, Doug Peterson's got to be the most important guy because he's going to be sitting there with Justin Fields.
Right.
We don't know what that really looks like for Fields right now with Eberflus taking over. So it's going to be the overall roster construction. So I agree. It's Ryan Poles' most important offseason addition for the Bears.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Good.
Were you looking for more?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Who'd I have next on the list after the Bears? Minnesota Vikings. Who's the most important offseason addition for the Vikings?
So I would have said Kwesi. You know, if you just sort of gave me the moves and
don't do it
on paper.
Don't do it.
You know, randomly. Like, you fire Rick Spielman, you fire Mike Zimmer, you bring in Kwesi. Well, that signifies a complete change. That's by far the most important thing.
Soon to be friend of the show, Rick Spielman.
Yes. But given the moves they've made since they did that, I think it's actually Kevin O'Connell.
Are you implying Kwesi's a puppet GM?
No, not at all.
Okay.
But what I'm implying is that the moves they've made since firing Spielman and hiring Kwesi have been very much from the same playbook. They've been stay the course. They've been don't do anything dramatic. Let's just keep going. And the difference, therefore, has to be in the coach. Like if the GM isn't making a lot of moves that are different from the old GM, then everything comes down. If you want to change from where you were last year, the guy that needs to make that happen is the head coach. Is changing from Mike Zimmer to Kevin O'Connell, A, you're going from defense to offense, but B, you're also going to be jumping on board this idea of, hey, the Sean McVay tree is the thing that's cooking. All those disciples are having success. He's the guy that needs to propel this forward.
Man. Yeah, interesting case. I would lean with Kevin O'Connell. That's fine. I think in part because now you're getting into the McVay branches, man. You got Brandon Staley's out there. Kevin O'Connell's out there. Maybe Zach Robinson has a job as a head coach in a couple of years. But the McVay branches are starting to find their way around the NFL. Does McVay get his own tree? Or is it all still Mike Shanahan's
tree? No, he can't have his own tree, right?
It's Mike Shanahan's tree.
When do you start a new tree? Or does it always just keep branching off? Because you can always, like, almost...
It's going to be like a big branch, though. Like, Kyle Shanahan's going to have his own branch. And then McVay's going to have his own
branch. Because we're still tracing people back to, like, Bill Walsh and, you know, even before that. Like, Sid Gilman and stuff. So At what point do you be like, no, this is all like the Shanahan tree, right? I mean, Shanahan goes back to Bill Walsh, right? This is,
I think so.
So technically, this is all part of Bill Walsh's tree. It's not even Shanahan's tree. It's not his tree.
I mean, at some point, the entire NFL is Bill Walsh, and it's like, all right, what are we even separating here?
Maybe Bill Walsh
isn't that good. He's produced all these terrible coaches.
Doesn't Bill Walsh go back to like Paul Brown or somebody? Like,
it's all Paul Brown.
So when do you start a new tree versus just a branch off the old tree?
Whenever you want.
Because it feels like we did that quietly with Shanahan, right? And it's only now that I've remembered that he was part of like somebody else's coaching tree.
It's whenever you want. But Zach Taylor's out there. You know, is Zach Taylor successful? He just went to the Super Bowl.
I mean, yes.
Was it Joe Burrow? So seeing Kevin O'Connell, new system in Minnesota with some decent pieces there. I'll go Kevin O'Connell because it's but it's really him and Kwesi together. I liked, you know, Kwesi's press conference saying he was, before they hired O'Connell, he was looking for a coach to partner with him, right? They are working together in this whole thing. And that could just be talk, but it is so crucial. The head coach, the GM, working together. It does seem like that's how the Vikings are going to operate. So I'll go both. Kwesi and O'Connell working together.
Both? Yeah, like you got to pick one.
I'll go O'Connell because Rick Spielman's coming on the show this week. So we can't say the guy that replaced him.
No, you could. That's how you big him up. You're like, oh, the guy that replaces Rick. I mean, that's the most important. Like, what shoes to step into.
True. Rick did a great job there.
Right.
For the most part. Above average work in Minnesota. Which is good in most lines of work.
That's how you should lead off the interview.
He was a top 10 to 15.
Congratulations on an above average overall career.
I mean, if there's only 32 roles of what you do in the world, and you're in the top half of that in the world, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Get you fired sometimes, but it's pretty good. Pretty good. All right, Green Bay Packers. Most important offseason addition.
Ugh. Does it have to be Christian Watson?
I mean, think about most of what's happened in Green Bay has been subtraction, right? It's Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers insides. Like all they've done this year.
Aaron Rodgers insides.
Well, yeah, he did the cleanse, the 12-day cleanse,
the ghee cleanse,
the ghee.
It's a lot of ghee.
Everything about Green Bay has been flushing out the old this offseason. It's tough to find additions other than the two first round Georgia defensive players, Quay Walker, Devontae Wyatt.
Yeah. I mean, Quay Walker is important again for opportunity cost. You'd grab a guy like that, pick 22 overall. What could you have had instead? But I think it ends up being Christian Watson. Like, you trade away Devontae Adams. This receiving core wasn't great even with Devontae Adams, right? Like, it was being talked about as a problem with Devontae Adams in it, who's the best receiver in the NFL. So without him, I mean, this is the worst receiving group in the NFL. And the only thing that has a chance of fixing that is Christian Watson. Or Sammy Watkins, or like Romeo Dubs, but it's Christian Watson.
This is not good, the fact that I want to say Watkins every time I say Christian Watson's name. The fact that he's on Sammy Watkins' team here. I was going to say Sammy Watkins, but like realistically, what are you getting out of Sammy Watkins?
I mean, not much.
Can Aaron Rodgers turn him into... there was a point where Sammy Watkins looked like the next star receiver. Year two in the NFL, he was
year two.
A star. Now, that was 7 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But Watkins, he had some injuries and everything. He looked like he was on his way. In Kansas City, he was the number three option, but he had games where he absolutely took over.
Yes.
Right? He had games where he took over. And in the playoffs, playoff Sammy, 2019. I think Sammy Watkins is the most important one. Because again, what can you expect from Christian Watson in year one? What can you expect from a rookie?
What can you expect from Sammy Watkins?
2015 play.
If you added up his last 2 years, it still would be an underwhelming season.
But he hasn't had Aaron Rodgers.
No, he's only had Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, not all Lamar Jackson the whole season. He's been banged up. Sammy Watkins is the most important addition. For this year.
Okay.
For the Packers. No, I agree. It's probably Watson. You know, because Because, again, they traded up to get him top of the second round. And our scouting report on Watson, you know, questionable ball skills, speed receiver. I don't think he's a great short or intermediate route runner. I think that aligns very closely with MVS, the departed Marquez Valdes-Scantling. But I think for Watson,
there's somebody,
is Watson worth it if he's just Marquez Valdes-Scantling? Guy who averages 17 per catch,
I mean, that's
is
probably
a deep
worth.
Threat. Is it worth it? Probably, but you would still want a little bit more volume, I think.
It's worth it in terms of, like, where they drafted him. If where you drafted him, that guy ends up being Marquez Valdes-Scantling, that's probably fair.
Yeah.
A fair return. The problem they have is that they don't – they now – who is their receivers? Like, they need somebody – okay, replacing Davante Adams is not going to happen from one player, right? The chance – again, we talked about it with Stephon Diggs to Justin Jefferson. To make that kind of lateral move is crazy. To make it for Davante Adams is even more insane because Adams is better than Stephon Diggs. And, like, the chances of you finding the best receiver in the NFL with one shot is basically impossible. So that's not going to happen. But you need to get somewhere. Like, you can't just, okay. Because if all you did is replace Marquez Valdes-Scantling, then you literally didn't touch the Davante Adams thing. Now you've just taken last year's receiving core and removed the best receiver in the NFL from it and said, have fun.
Like, they're going to work your magic, Aaron. And play action. And
So he needs to be better than that from that point of view. That, like, otherwise they're screwed. There's somebody I follow on Twitter. I forget who it is, but he's, like, working through Christian Watson tape, you know, right now, and posting, like, clips and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's like it's sort of the first time he's seen Christian Watson tape, and he's, like, keeps being, you know, and, like,
got to be a Packers guy.
Yeah. But, you know, like, you know, every rare Wes Welker drop was from a guy that clearly didn't watch an awful lot of Wes Welker, who would drop, like, you know, quite regularly a lot of the passes. But every time it came up, it was like, oh, there's another rare Wes Welker drop.
Yeah.
It's like this guy's like, oh, you'd kind of, you'd like to see Christian bring that one in, you know, hit him in the hands. Okay. You have to elevate first. Like, ideally, you'd want to see him bringing those catches in, right? It's like, yeah, you're going to want to get used to that. There's quite a few of those in the tape.
It shows up. I mean, watching Watson at the Senior Bowl, though, too, he at least, like, every time I was ready to write off his hands or his ball skills, he would make a nice back shoulder adjustment. Like, he'd go up and get it, and it's just inconsistent, right? And, again, we'll see if Aaron Rodgers can extract the best out of him or Sammy Watkins and what happens there, but I think it's Sammy and Watson. Sammy Watkins, Christian Watson. Detroit Lions to round out the NFC North. Most important offseason addition.
Probably Aiden Hutchinson.
Like, Aiden Hutchinson.
Top draft pick every time. They got lucky in the draft.
I was going to do something different, so it's okay.
Okay. I don't think they would have anticipated there was much of a chance Aiden Hutchinson was going to be there too. Certainly, so there was like a period, right, of like a month and a half, maybe 6 weeks, where it looked very unlikely that he was going to be anything other than the number one overall pick. And I know, like, this is, hey, PFF has the Hutch podcast, so we're like, the betting market will tell you that, right? He was the favorite for the number one overall pick for a decent stretch of this pre-draft process. Had nothing to do with us talking to him for a podcast series. He was the number one prospect. And then the closer we got to the draft, like very the last week, it was like, hey, the Jags are really going to do this Trayvon Walker thing. And they do. All of a sudden, the Lions, like, run in the card. They get Aiden Hutchinson number two overall. I mean, that's big, right? If people were right and Hutchinson is the number one prospect in this draft, that is potentially transformative to that defense.
Yeah, I mean, Hutchinson makes sense. I was going to go Jameson Williams, you know, not just to mix it up, but again, I think, you know, more value on the perimeter. And if Jameson Williams hits, and they traded up from 32 to 12 to get him, even though it feels like a huge move. We talked about the Vikings maybe winning that trade, but I mean, it's a big investment by the Lions there. And Jameson Williams, the deep threat, the health, but if he hits, I think he's the biggest offseason addition for the Lions. It transforms that receiving core. A guy like DJ Chark is added just for 1 year, but now you're talking, there's a chance Jameson Williams and Amon-Ra St. Brown become a pretty good combination. And you still want to add more, you know, going into next year for whether it's Jared Goff or who the next quarterback is, but you're getting that very important position back on track at receiver if you're the Lions.
Yeah.
So I understand Hutchinson, of course, but I'll go Jameson Williams there. All right, let's go AFC North now. A couple more divisions to get through, a few more. Baltimore Ravens, biggest offseason addition.
I think it could well end up being Linderbaum.
Really?
Yeah. Look, the narrative on him went on a weird roller coaster ride throughout the entire pre-draft process. When we finished the college football season, it's like Linderbaum is one of these special offensive linemen, right? The way that Penei Sewell was being talked about last year, maybe not quite the way that Quentin Nelson was being talked about, but in that same kind of ballpark. It's like this is one of the special offensive linemen that comes around every now and again. The best center PFF has ever seen enter the draft. And we were asking questions like, is he so good that you need to start throwing out everything you know about center value, right? The way you did with Quentin Nelson. Guards don't get taken at number six overall. Yeah, but like, look at that guard. Okay, fine. We'll take him at six overall. And not only did he justify that, he's more than justified. He's been like arguably the best offensive lineman in the NFL, most valuable since coming into the league. If Linderbaum is that kind of guy, and even if he's not Nelson, if he's if he's a Penei Sewell caliber type of prospect, if he is as good as he looked in college, it's an absolute freaking steal for where Baltimore got him. And B, it'll change that offensive line. Like the whole thing will look better because Linderbaum is there in the middle with his freakish athleticism and just dominating people in the run game. And that will, for a team in Baltimore that is predicated off the run game first and foremost, that can be a huge needle mover.
You're absolutely right, especially if they do tap into his skill set more, right? And they do play to his strengths. And, you know, all my rants about how he's a great fit. He's a playmaker, just like adding a receiver, just like adding a running back. He is he has a skill set to build around. And if the Ravens do that, I could see Tyler Linderbaum absolutely being that guy. I'll say Kyle Hamilton, though, their first-round pick. Again, we're really going out on big limbs here. But Kyle Hamilton, because he could do a lot of different things in the secondary. And will the Ravens, who a couple years ago we were talking about creating positionless football, are they going to create more positionless football with Kyle Hamilton, who has linebacker skills, who has free safety skills, he has tight end eraser skills? How do they use Kyle Hamilton? So I'll go with him being the most important player. Plus, he's the guy, he's their first-round pick. They get the two, him and Linderbaum. I think it's both of those guys together. Could also be the great Morgan Moses.
I was going to say, how can you let this go by without suggesting that the great Morgan Moses is their most
That's
important
a good point. Morgan Moses. Okay, it's really Morgan Moses.
He has to step into the presumably giant shoes vacated by Alejandro Villanueva.
That's right. So it's really Morgan Moses, the most, because the other thing Morgan Moses allows, it's like, man, you just filled your right tackle spot for $5 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable. Now you're freed up to draft Tyler Linderbaum, right? You're freed up to draft Kyle Hamilton. And Morgan Moses is the domino that lets that all happen.
The domino.
It's the domino.
I don't think that's that.
It's the first domino. It's the first domino to allow other dominoes of Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum moves.
Yeah, all right. All right. It's fine.
It's another negative metaphor for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of is.
Bengals are up next. Who's the most important Bengal offseason addition?
So the Bengals are a classic one where
you're going to say more than one. You're just going to say the offensive line.
Yeah, it's the aggregate. The Bengals have done it in the aggregate. They fix an offensive line by throwing a ton of resources at it, but spread across multiple players, as distinct from Jacksonville, say, just handing all of the money to Brandon Scherff, or Tampa Bay, who went in with a specific target of, like, we need one guy. The Bengals brought in Alex Kappa, Ted Karras, Lyle Collins, and gave themselves the flexibility to not have to do anything in the draft until, you know, the fourth round, the fifth round, beyond. So it's the aggregate of those moves. I don't think any one of them is the most important. If I had to pick one of those offensive line moves, it would be Lyle Collins at right tackle. But it's that aggregate move that is it for the Bengals.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. Did you hear Joe Burrow talking about his sack totals? And
yes. Did you hear him So the start of that clip, he said sax a lot like sex.
He did, yeah.
A lot. Like, he said sex. You know?
Is this like one of those... No, go ahead.
And then he started talking about good sex and bad sex. I think he knew what he was doing.
It can be good sex on third down. Depending on what you're trying to do.
Yeah. So, yeah, I heard it. What of it?
Let's assume he was talking about the football play.
Okay.
Any thoughts on the philosophy, what he was trying to say there? He was basically, to paraphrase, he was basically trying to say, if you get sacked, uh-huh, on third down, it's not as bad because you're going to give up the ball anyway. And he will get sacked at times on third down while trying to extend plays, right? If the initial play call's not there, he will extend the play to try to pick up a first down because, I guess, putting words into his mouth, but theoretically he's saying, well, a check down isn't getting it done. Therefore, the difference between a check down and me losing 5 or 6 yards on a sack is negligible. I think you could argue that the check down's better because there's still a chance that could turn into it. But he's trying to say there's still a chance I can convert the first down if I extend the play.
Yeah. I mean, what he said wasn't crazy. Like, he made some good points there. What it does to an extent is ignore, like, the taking hits generally is not without cost, you know?
Right.
Like, it's not just the trade-off between...
It's not just that one play that you're living for here.
Right. It's not just the trade-off between, like, that big play you can make to extend the drive and a failed drive. You also have to factor in, yeah, but, like, one of them results in a giant 300-pound guy falling on you. The other one probably doesn't. So you have to weigh that up as well. Like, there are quarterbacks out there that simply don't take those hits. And those guys tend to be the ones that last an awful long time. So if you want to be the quarterback that takes the Bengals to, you know, a lot of Super Bowls and has a 15-year career and, you know, puts himself up there with Peyton Manning and blah, 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 you can't always take those hits just because that's the most likely way of extending that drive and keeping things going. So I think generally his point basically was that, hey, the sack total isn't telling the whole story, right? And there are reasons sometimes where I'm extending these plays or taking more time. This is true. I think it's also fair to say that he's probably still erring too far on that side, and you would like him to rein it in a bit in the other direction for his own sake, if anything else.
Completely agree. It is funny how the the offensive line narrative hasn't changed, but the narrative about taking hits has changed. Because last year, he got hurt on a sack. He got hurt on that play. So last year at this point, it's like, we have to protect Joe. Got to protect Joe. Got to do whatever he can to protect Joe. And last year, he played a little crazy at times. Like, he played a little crazy, like he was describing. Right? He was keeping plays alive and chucking it up and just trying to create. And there are questions about that going forward. We've talked a lot about it's not about QB size and, you know, durability and all that stuff. Playing style matters. And if Burrow does take these hits over and over again, it'll affect his play style the same way we think it affects a run first quarterback, or it's described to affect a run first quarterback who runs the ball a lot. So we'll both cheat here and say the aggregate offensive line, in part because it's probably going to give more opportunities to make plays, but in part because we're also going to learn more about Joe Burrow, his playing style, how much the sack totals are actually on him versus the pass blocking, because the Bengals should be much better up front. Cleveland Browns.
Tough one.
Who could it be? All right, it's Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. For many, many reasons.
It's the most important offseason addition.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Just added Jadeveon Clowney per Instagram or something.
They did.
That's nice.
Sure, yeah. Good addition. Yeah, look, it's pretty self-explanatory. They not only traded a huge amount of trade collateral to get Deshaun Watson, they then handed him an unprecedented 200 and whatever it was, $1 million fully guaranteed contract for a guy that we still don't know if he's going to get suspended for any period or longer, or the ramifications of these 22 civil lawsuits that are still out there hanging over him. So it's franchise defining. That move is franchise defining. And we have no idea what it is defining. You know, we said a few years ago with that Raiders draft where they had the 3 first-round picks, that was franchise defining. And we had a pretty good idea what it was defining at the time, and it wasn't good. the Browns move for Deshaun Watson, it is franchise defining, but I don't think anybody has any idea what it's defining yet.
From a football standpoint, there's a lot at play here. We've got a Browns team in 2020 that made the playoffs, right, for the first time in years. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield played good football from week 7 on. Last year, we thought they did a great job in the offseason building their roster. I think they still have a very good roster. Baker played hurt, below average football last year. They did not make the playoffs. Somewhat close. Didn't make it, though. And now Watson comes in. And the last time we saw Deshaun Watson, one of the bigger anomalies, I think, in NFL history, right? There's a few seasons in NFL history where you could say a quarterback legitimately played really, really well and a team only won a handful of games. That just doesn't happen historically. So Watson played really well in 2020, the last time we saw him play. And the Texans won 4 games. So I think putting Watson onto a better roster, seeing if he could replicate, that was also the one year that he really played at that level, right? He had been trending that way. First year he had played at that level. Plus, you know, how much, you know, what's he going to be as a player? You know, again, using PFF terms, is he a 90-plus quarterback going forward now? Is he a low 80s PFF grade type of quarterback? That's a big difference, obviously, too. And we've only seen that one year of elite play from Deshaun Watson. But clearly, I think the Browns are going to get an upgrade at QB, and they already have a good roster, and they're in this loaded AFC North. Pittsburgh Steelers has to be Kenny Pickett.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not Mitch Trubisky. They're the one team that drafted – no other quarterback was drafted before 73. Just Pickett.
Yep.
So Kenny Pickett's the most important one for the Steelers.
Yes. The first big decision they've had to make at quarterback since they drafted Ben Roethlisberger back in 2004. And never
our
had
draft
a
draft year, Sam.
Didn't have a losing season since that point. Tomlin hadn't had one. Roethlisberger didn't have one. Now the last losing season they had was the one that enabled them to get Roethlisberger at 11 overall, I think. They got him that year. This is the next big decision. And in a year where everybody seemed to hate the quarterback class, and there were a lot of big-name veterans available, they grabbed Mitchell Trubisky as their stopgap rather than get involved in the sweepstakes for one of these other big-name quarterbacks. And then in the draft, they got Kenny Pickett in the first round at 20 overall when the next quarterbacks weren't going to go until the 70s. So, yeah, that's a pretty huge statement to make.
Oh, I wanted to see more Mitch Trubisky.
Oh, you're going to see it. Don't worry. You're going to get...
You think he's going to start?
Yes.
If they drafted Pickett at 20, it's in part because they believe the whole narrative that he's ready to step in.
No. I mean, Trubisky...
That's got to be a part of their evaluation,
Trubisky
right?
Trubisky was drafted at 2, and he didn't start.
True.
2? 3? When did...
He was 2, yeah. They had 3, but they traded up to 2.
Right.
To, you know, lock him in.
Yeah. Got to secure the bisque. He was drafted at 2 and he didn't start.
Yeah,
because they had Mike Glennon, who they just gave the 3-year, $45 million contract to.
True.
It's the same thing. This is the ridiculous. History is literally repeating itself. Trubisky is being Trubisky'd by Kenny Pickett.
Well, that's like Mariota being. Mariota got Tannehill, and then Mariota tried to go Tannehill Carr and didn't do it. You know. That's what happens.
Yeah, but that one didn't work. This one's actually, it's going to happen.
It's actually going to happen. So obviously it's Kenny Pickett. Not much else to say here. Steelers, ride and die with Kenny. His little hands. In Pittsburgh.
Small hands.
Let's wrap it up with the Easts. NFC East and then the AFC. Starting in the NFC, the Dallas Cowboys, most important offseason edition. Jerry Jones and their draft board. It's got to be the draft board.
God, I love that they show that every year.
It's got to be Tyler Smith, at presumably playing guard. First-round pick out of Tulsa.
That's important, but I'm not 100% sure how much they need him to be starting. Like, as much as my point was more that, hey, look, you've got two offensive line positions that are kind of positions of need, right? Not that they're dire needs. But if you're going to say that left guard is an issue because Connor Williams isn't there anymore, I think you also need to say that right tackle is an issue because Terrence Steele isn't great. On the other hand, both those guys graded like in the 60s, which is average. That's your embodiment of creep back toward average. So I'm not 100% sure that either of those guys moves the needle as much as adding Jalen Tolbert in the third round. Now, he's a third rounder, but again, this comes back to, like, where did you rank him? How good do you think he is? PFF thought he was significantly better than that. He went pick 88. We had him at 54 on the big board. I had him as, like, number 6 or 7 or something in my wide receiver rankings. I think Tolbert is a really good player, and he reminds me a little bit of guys like Michael Gallup, who obviously is already on that roster. And he's now the guy that gets the opportunity to step in and make sure that they can still run three deep at wide receiver and cause teams some problems. So they traded away Amari Cooper, but they also let walk Cedric Wilson in the offseason. So they weren't just losing one wide receiver, they're losing two. CeeDee Lamb and Mike Gallup are obviously both really good players, but simply having a third threat is important.
So yeah, I can get behind Jalen Tolbert just because, let's go back through Dak's career here, right?
Yeah.
2016, rookie, really good. 17 and 18, by PFF standards, he took a step back. 18 is when they traded for Amari Cooper, and using EPA and PFF grade, everything got better. Essentially, since Amari Cooper showed up, Dak got much better. We know that there is always the quarterback's the driver, but there's some dependency on receivers. Say what you want about Amari Cooper, who's now, you know, kind of run his course in two different places, but Dak's production got so much better when Amari Cooper showed up. And of course, you make it better with Michael Gallup. You make it better with CeeDee Lamb. So it's not just Cooper. It's everything got better, right? And we ranked the receiving core for the Cowboys top three, what, the last 3 or 4 years? At least since CeeDee Lamb showed up there. So does Tolbert need to directly replace Amari Cooper? I don't think so, but you're better off having three options rather than just two. Right, and CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup, you feel like those are pretty dependable guys. James Washington also gets added to the mix. He's been an okay four, right, for his career. So if Jalen Tolbert becomes a legit part, a top three receiver for the Cowboys, I think that's a fair argument with him over Tyler Smith.
Yeah, particularly if Tyler Smith, you know, doesn't start day one or isn't particularly good day one. Tolbert is the guy that makes a material difference. I don't know if there's a more supporting cast sensitive quarterback in the NFL than Dak Prescott. Like, you tinker with that guy's receivers or his offensive line, the supporting cast around him changes slightly, and his play, I think, dramatically shifts one way or the other. So you get rid of Amari Cooper because you were unhappy at the value that he was providing, but he was still providing value. It may not have been surplus value given what you were paying.
Yeah, that's fair.
But he was providing value to that offense. So that's value you need to replace. And if you don't, things are going to go badly.
All right, let's go Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of power offseason additions. Nothing bigger than A.J. Brown, though.
Yeah.
It's got to be A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, Jordan Davis is bigger, but maybe not impact-wise. Unless he's jumping on something, then it's impact-wise because he's got a lot of weight and speed to him.
No, I agree. It's A.J. Brown. That's a move that should completely transform that entire offense, that entire team.
We did not get a chance to discuss the James Bradbury signing by the Philadelphia Eagles. Maybe now is a good time, or we could.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll talk about it when we preview the season next year. But Bradbury, they pick him up after he gets released by the Giants on the cheap. And man, that's just good business. He fits the scheme well. And all of a sudden, the Eagles go through this offseason and slowly start adding impact players and rounding out their roster, and they still look like Zach McPherson was going to be their starting corner opposite Darius Slay with Avante Maddox in the slot, and all of a sudden, boom, James Bradbury's available. You don't have to pay him $16 million a year. You're paying him on the cheap. You're not losing comp picks in the future and all that stuff, and he's a good scheme fit, and all of a sudden it's James Bradbury opposite Darius Slay. Even though Bradbury's not coming off a great year, he's a good NFL corner who was really good 2 years ago. I just love this move overall for the Eagles.
Yeah, and should be better when you can have him opposite Darius Slay, and he doesn't have to be the best guy in the secondary. Like, that's important as well. There might not be a team that's had a better offseason than the Philadelphia Eagles, top to bottom.
And it started slow, right? I mean, wasn't there a point in free agency where they'd added, like, one player, right? I mean, it's like it was
– Yeah.
But this is part of –
Hassan Reddick, and that was, like, it.
It was Hassan Reddick, right.
Then they re-signed, you know, a few key players even relatively low depth guys, the great Boston Scott, re-signed Greg Ward, Anthony Harris. Like, these are guys that will contribute, but not necessarily take up a ton of money. They release Fletcher Cox, only to end up bringing him back on a one-year deal on a cheaper contract. So they got cheaper for one of the guys that's been, you know, a stalwart in that defensive line. Hassan Reddick was their one sort of free agent impact move. They end up trading for A.J. Brown. They pick up James Bradbury late in the day. Their draft was one of people's favorites between Jordan Davis and N'Kobe Dean, who has the potential to be a steal of this draft. And look, N'Kobe Dean could be in the conversation for like most important offseason moves. If he is, like, if he's as good in the NFL as he looked in college, which was the best player on a defense loaded with NFL talent, like absolutely stuffed full of it. That Georgia defense is insane, and the players they're going to be sending to the draft this year, next year. N'Kobe Dean was the best player on that defense pretty consistently. If he's that guy in the NFL, and hey, Jordan Davis is still in front of him, by the way, if that's a factor, as is now as is now Fletcher Cox, and like he's got some people in front of him to keep him clean if that was a determining factor in how good he is. Like if he's that player, that's transformative for the defense.
Yeah, it really ended up being a nice offseason for the Eagles. With, of course, I think A.J. Brown being the most important player, right? We've described this. We talked about it last show. I described the difference between A.J. Brown, Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, at least in my mind, the ability of A.J. Brown to take over games and the Eagles' ability now to win in the pass game, right? I mean, they ran the ball like crazy right around week six or seven last year. I always talk about having options to win. Now you have the option to win in the pass game, I assume, with A.J. Brown being there on the outside. Washington Commanders has to be Carson Wentz. Anyone else even in the running?
No. I mean, Wentz is it, but Jahan Dotson is a pretty important one as well.
You could make the argument long-term because we don't know if Wentz is going to be here beyond a year.
Yeah.
Knowing the way the Wentz career path has gone, that Dotson choosing him, he was the one who went 15 overall. I kept saying, or did he go 16?
16.
Okay, he went after Kenyon Green. But grabbing Dotson that high, important because, you know, it was higher than we anticipated for whatever that's worth.
I mean, look.
But either way, that's the guy that they went and said, we're going to get this receiver, Dotson.
Yeah, Washington's draft is an example of the Mayock drafting, right, where the data says there might not be value in getting people that slide in a draft board, but there's a lack of value. You're losing value by reaching on players. And Washington's entire draft was a draft of reaches. The PFF big board had Jahan Dotson 56. Now, okay, the consensus board had him higher, I think, but 16 was still a massive reach relative to any public board that's out there. Same thing was true, like, all the way down the draft. Darian Mathis in the second round was drafted, like, 50 spots higher than his position on the big board. Brian Robinson Jr. drafted, like, 50 spots higher than his position on the PFF big board. So just generally, this draft for Washington is one where they have gone out on a limb and reached for players pretty much every single round, which the data says is bad process. And, okay, they might hit. They might end up getting proved right. But generally, those picks don't work out, and they are reaches for a reason. And that, if that happens for a guy like Jahan Dotson, you know, you spent the 16th overall pick on that guy. That's a pretty big pick to be making a significant reach like that on.
So longer term, it could be Dotson. But for right now, three more years of Carson Wentz at, you know, $26 to $28 million per year. So I'll go.
So it's funny. Washington fans now have started to get, because, you know, Wentz is their quarterback, right? So you got to rally around the guy.
Of course.
Defend him. And, you know, Wentz right now, generally, league-wide, is the butt of quite a lot of jokes. You know? Like, he would be one of the more...
That's kind of unfair, though.
So he would be one of the more mocked quarterbacks in the NFL, right?
If not, but mostly because of the photo shoots, though.
I mean, not mostly, but that didn't help. Certainly, when you dress like a hot dog at your introductory press conference, you're not gonna have less abuse at the end of that than you are at the start. But also, just generally, you know, he's been kind of funny recently to watch play. It's kind of entertaining. Well, Washington fans will point out, it's like, he's got one of the lowest interception rates in NFL history.
To which the obvious answer is, so does basically every current NFL quarterback. Like, the league has changed. Like, if you look at the list of, like, top interception rates in NFL history, it's all people that are playing right now, or people that retired, like, last Tuesday.
Other than Jameis. Pretty much everybody but Jameis.
So, you know, there is still a Jameis out there. But, like, everybody else basically has one of the best interception rates of NFL history. The other thing with Carson Wentz is, he doesn't necessarily have a ton of terrible plays, but the ones he does have are pretty special, you know?
That was absolutely last year with the Colts.
Carlsberg isn't a big beer brand over here, right?
I don't think so.
I forget where it's from, but it's some European lager of some description. But they had this advertising campaign where their thing was like, Carlsberg doesn't do X, but if they did, they'd probably be the best X in the world, right? And they would just, whatever the thing was, they'd change it. Holidays, blah, blah, blah. They just cycle through. Like, you know, that it reminds me a little bit of that, right? Like, Wentz doesn't throw the most interceptions in the world, but they might be the best interceptions in the world, right? Like, left-handed.
They're going to be left-handed from the end zone to a line, overtime.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he might not throw more of them than everybody else, but the ones he does make up for it, you know? There's multiple interceptions worth in every pick that he throws.
Well, Wentz is definitely the most important addition, I think, for the Commanders. We've got... he's a couple years removed from 2019, ranking number 11 in PFF WAR. But in 2020, the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. Last year, dead smack in the middle, 18 out of 39, just using WAR. So right in the middle.
And last year, you have to bear in mind that last year was being, like, propped up by Frank Reich and the desperate attempt to salvage Carson Wentz.
Now, wait a second here. I think he landed right where we anticipated, which is middle of the pack, and you just don't know. Like, he ranked 18th in WAR, right? Okay, let's just use that as a baseline. When you talk middle of the pack, you know, that could be as high as 12th. That could be as low as 24th. I mean, there's a range there in the middle of the pack. I think somebody rightfully brought up the point that last year you were bullish on the Commanders team that used to be called the football team, because they had Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback, a bigger roller coaster than Carson Wentz historically. Isn't Wentz an upgrade over Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I mean, he's an upgrade over Ryan Fitzpatrick last year because he played like 40 snaps and then didn't play again.
Ryan Fitzpatrick's the totality of Ryan Fitzpatrick. Carson Wentz is an upgrade.
But the totality, no. The last few years of Ryan Fitzpatrick would probably be better than Carson Wentz.
I think they were.
Which was the...
I mean, 19 and 20 were.
Like, that was the optimism, right? That was the optimism that you had about Ryan Fitzpatrick. Is that, hey, he's playing the best football of his career, this deep into his career, and the last few years he's given you, okay, it's been a wild roller coaster ride, but it sort of spits out as the
18,
average.
18 through 20, Fitz was better, I think, every single season.
Yeah. So that was my logic then, is that if you get a full season of Ryan Fitzpatrick, he'll probably spit you out league average play, and league average play on this team is enough to take you somewhere significant. It's also, by the way, he was significantly cheaper than Carson Wentz, which is another important element there.
True. All right, Carson Wentz. I'll go with him. You're saying.
But I'll give you that Wentz's box score numbers are prettier. Like, his touchdown to interception ratio will generally be prettier than Fitzpatrick's.
Yeah, I mean, that's whatever it is. New York Giants rounding out the NFC East. Most important offseason addition.
Brian Daboll.
Yeah. See how we do this, though? We didn't say Joe Shane, the new GM, because Daboll's an offensive head coach.
Yeah.
And Daboll's got this history of, if he was a defensive head coach, I'd probably go Joe Shane. That's the GM. Got to get this roster back on track. And maybe Shane's the answer.
Maybe.
But I think there's something to Daboll getting the best out of Josh Allen. And whether it's Daniel Jones this year or the next quarterback, Daboll's got to do that again.
Yeah. To me, quarterbacks like Daniel Jones, most people have written off Daniel Jones already. I think there's at least, we know how important changes in environment are to quarterbacks. So I think at the very minimum, if you go and change the regime, new GM, new head coach, everything is shifting, you kind of owe it to yourself as a franchise to at least get a fair evaluation on the guy you've already got sitting in the building. Now, he's probably not the guy, right? Because he hasn't shown enough to say that he is yet. On the other hand, his offensive line has been garbage. It's been a bad system. The team franchise has been heading in the wrong direction. That's why everybody got fired. So I think you owe it to yourself to find out if you actually have a viable quarterback in the building already before you go, okay, now we got to figure out how we get this how we get the next one. And a guy like Brian Daboll and being able to rebuild some of that offensive line and add, you know, hopefully the receiving core stays healthy this year, gives you the chance to do that. So I think it's important to have a guy like Daboll in there who's able to at least give you a decent idea of what Daniel Jones is at the end of year one before then. How about this? Year one, Brian Daboll is the most important person for the New York Giants. Years two and beyond, it may end up becoming Joe Shane if Daniel Jones isn't the guy, because then the most important thing becomes who's the quarterback.
Finding the next quarterback. On field this year, though, too, Evan Neal, Kayvon Thibodeau, the two top picks, I'd go Evan Neal getting that offensive line to creep back toward average. But I agree on Daboll as a whole, because I think he'll have the biggest impact in the quarterback development. But obviously, new regime, so it's going to be head coach and the GM. All right, let's round it out with the AFC East, starting with the New England Patriots. Most important off-season addition. I'm going DeVante Parker.
Okay.
And it's funny because it's not that it was an afterthought, but it's just, you know, mid-round pick, going to get DeVante Parker. But in a year where everybody in New England saying, get Mac Jones some weapons, the Patriots are another team that aren't going the star route. They're going, look at this entire group, right? DeVante Parker, Jacoby Myers, Nelson Agholor is still there. Tyquan Thornton in the second round. Kendrick Bourne, probably their most dependable receiver last year, right? So they're 4 and 5 deep, kind of, at receiver as far as options go. That might be enough when you add it to Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith at tight end. But DeVante Parker adds something different to that equation. Not speed, because they don't have any speed anywhere besides Thornton, but size, ball skills, contested catchability, guy that can beat man coverage even if he's not going to get open against man coverage. So I'll say DeVante Parker here. Could be Cole Strange.
Cole Strange, I think, is a pretty important player for them, because they're going to need, like, he needs to come in and replace a good offensive lineman. They traded away Shaq Mason for a fifth-round pick, spent a first-round pick on a guy that was a reach, Cole Strange. Again, the idea being that there is a thing about reaches not generally being good. So that's an important pick. I would say, as well, the guy that's stepping in to replace Josh McDaniels, but we're not 100% sure who that is. You know, they basically just got the band back together in terms of, like, anybody that used to work for Belichick in the past. Well, we got some coaching openings. Jump in. Let's see what we can do. But nobody seems to have any idea who's actually, like, running the show. Like, who's going to call plays? Who's going to be the offensive coordinator? Maybe Joe Judge. At which point, like, Joe Judge becomes a pretty important addition to this team. A former special teams, you know, coordinator, the first time round, I guess, for Bill Belichick, becomes the head coach of the Giants. Doesn't go well. Now he's potentially the guy that's replacing Josh McDaniels, who, for all his failings the first time around as a head coach, has been like a pretty steady hand as an offensive coordinator and play caller for a decade. So now you got Mac Jones staring into a really important year. The pieces are changing around him in terms of offensive line, receiving core, and, like, Joe Judge might be the play caller, might be the guy running the offense.
Matt Patricia is a senior football advisor, but seemingly having a lot more impact on the offensive side of the ball. Joe Judge, merely an offensive assistant.
Right? Also, like,
they haven't named an offensive coordinator. We don't know exactly what's happening. Maybe Belichick's. Belichick's going to be the first head coach to call offensive and defensive plays.
They appear to be, very specifically, all of the coaching staff in New England, like, saying, we're just positionless defense. We're going to be a titleless coaching staff, right? We're just a group of coaches here.
According to just going to Patriots.com, according to Patriots.com, they have two running backs coaches.
Yeah.
Ivan Fears, who's been there forever. Vinny Sinceri, the former defensive back. Two running backs coaches. But they have an assistant offensive line coach, but no offensive line coach.
Right.
It's just funny. I mean, I don't know how updated this is,
but, like, Gerard,
it's just very funny, though.
Gerard Mayo, I think, was talking about how, like, look, we don't think that titles are a useful thing. Like, it's just, it puts people in a box, whatever. We're just coaches out here. We're just football coaches.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they have some sort of criteria for who's working with whom and when and all that stuff. They're not announcing it in a title.
Yeah. But there's probably a reason that people, like, the rest of the league does this way, you know? So whoever is going to be running the offense in the most, like, important way and calling plays might be the most important.
And we might never know who it is. Like, people are just going to be looking at the New England sideline between plays, like, who's talking?
What if they just have a sheet up? Like, yeah. Somebody behind there. Or, like, there's five coaches in a line, all with the play call sheet in front of their face, and you can't tell which one's talking.
That's going to be great. I really think it's time for Belichick to be the first coach, probably since the 20s, to call offensive and defensive plays. I assume it happened at some point when football is in its infancy.
Or all the coaches are up in the booth, right, in a line, and they're all just talking in the headset constantly. Yes. One of them's calling plays down, but you have no idea which one. It's like, you know, in college where they have the signs, right, and like two of them are decoys or whatever. Is there any one of them? You don't know which one it is because you don't know which the quarterback's looking at. That's what the Patriots are going to do, but with play callers. Three guys are going to have the headset and a play calling sheet. They're all calling stuff in, and only the quarterback knows which is real.
So, yeah, that's going to be great. So whoever's calling the plays and or Devontae Parker, most important Patriots this offseason. Dolphins, most important offseason addition. I'm debating between Mike McDaniel or Tyreek Hill.
I think it's Tyreek Hill. I think their offensive line additions have been more important than Tyreek Hill. But, again, that's in the aggregate. I don't think I can argue that Teron Armstead is more important individually than Tyreek Hill.
Man, this is going to be – it's a crazy offseason. If the Dolphins didn't even have – so there's a head coaching change on top of all this stuff. If they just had, two huge additions at left tackle and left guard and Connor Williams and Teron Armstead, had the big trade for Tyreek Hill – had all this other stuff going, it's like, all right, how are the Dolphins? But then you add in Mike McDaniel as the new head coach coming over from the Shanahan branch and or tree, then, man, there's a lot of answers here for the Dolphins. But once again, long term, it's probably the head coach. It's probably McDaniel. But I got to go Tyreek Hill because of what he's going to bring to this offense with Jalen Waddle, with the speed of, you know, with Mike Gesicki and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure there's a single receiver that affects the game every down more than Tyreek Hill. Like, I think Devontae Adams is the best wide receiver in the NFL. Devontae Adams doesn't change coverages the way Tyreek Hill does because teams are terrified of what he can do. Like, Devontae Adams is good and he's athletic and he's the best route runner in the league. But if you give up a step of separation to Devontae Adams, he can get it back, right? Now, maybe not in time. He'll be open, and if Aaron Rodgers hits him with the pass, then it's a catch and you've given up a big play. If you give up separation to Tyreek Hill, you can't get it back. Like, if he keeps running, you won't catch him. So that's a permanent problem on that play. And that can be a permanent problem that means not just if the ball arrives, then it's a catch, but it means not only is it a catch, but it might be a touchdown because you're not stopping him. You're going to rely on somebody else closing that gap and making the play. So Tyreek Hill can do that at any moment. And if you put him in one-on-one coverage, he will do that at any moment, which means you can't put him in one-on-one coverage. You have to have some kind of help. And that's why all of a sudden Kansas City is seeing too high everywhere because you can't just have one guy isolated on Tyreek Hill and a safety patrolling the middle of the field because that safety won't make it at the sideline. And if you isolated the corner on Tyreek Hill, it's a touchdown immediately.
Also immediately, the Dolphins might have the fastest team in the NFL. Fastest offense. I mean, just adding Raheem Mostert, his 4.3 speed, assuming he's back healthy. Gesicki at tight end is a great athlete. Waddle is a 4.3 guy. And Tyreek Hill, as you mentioned. Is Mike McDaniel, though, the most important part? Because you've made the point, you got to figure out how to make these pieces work. I've made the point, I think you just run football plays and the football players will take over, Hill and Waddle and their speed and their athleticism and all that stuff. But do you need to craft touches for Tyreek? Do you have to craft touches for Waddle and make this whole thing work? Sort of, kind of, but Mike McDaniel, it's on him to pull all that together.
Yeah, I mean, he becomes the most important player or the most important person in terms of maximizing the impact of all that. Like, bringing in Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill will change defenses every single play. Now, in order to make sure that Tyreek Hill plus Jalen Waddle plus the other guys you have in that offense equals the maximum impact that it can have, that's on McDaniel.
All right, we got two more teams left, unless I miscounted somewhere. New York Jets, most important offseason addition for the Jets.
I mean, three first-round picks. There's quite a lot to choose from for the Jets. They made some big signings in free agency as well. Laken Tomlinson, a big addition to that offensive line. A curious one, given that he essentially plays the same position as Elijah Vera Tucker did last year. So it's always slightly unusual when a team targets a player that's going to necessitate a position change somewhere. But should, in theory, upgrade that offensive line. DJ Reed is an important addition to the secondary. I think, ultimately, Sauce Gardner.
Ooh. Sauce at four. Yeah. Four overall.
Because they didn't have any corner. I mean, they added DJ Reed, but they had one of the worst cornerback rooms in the NFL last year. And now looking at DJ Reed plus Sauce Gardner, pushing Bryce Hall to, you know, say cornerback three, which I love. I like Bryce Hall as a player. Yeah. Turn a weakness into a strength.
Yeah, I mean, Sauce Gardner is this very unusual prospect. And one actually that I think fits really well in this defense. Like, I always think that Sauce Gardner was slightly miscast or misdescribed in the pre-draft process because of his freakish length and his size and all those kinds of things. He looks like a prototypical press man cover corner, right? The classic kind of guy that belongs in that Bill Belichick man coverage system. He doesn't really play like that, though. It's not that he isn't good at press coverage, but I think he's actually really good in zone coverage. And all of a sudden, you put him in a defense where he gets to play a kind of Richard Sherman role, be isolated a little bit in single coverage, but be playing a lot of zone and a lot of off coverage. I think that's actually where he's best at. So kind of quietly, I think this is a perfect fit, maybe the perfect fit for him to land in. And if he can come in and be a number one corner or even just a good starter with DJ Reed opposite and DJ Reed with position versatility, able to move around if they need him to, all of a sudden that secondary becomes pretty good.
So maybe it does get a little redundant if we only talk about quarterbacks, head coaches, and receivers. And I agree with all the Sauce stuff. I think that's awesome. I also think the fact that they made that move, right, after not the Jets fans are the organization, though they claimed they had the big board. But I like the fact that they went corner at four and didn't force a pass rusher and all that stuff. So it might, but going back to it, it might feel redundant adding all receivers and QBs and head coaches, but I think, you know, that's what moves the needle. So I'm going Garrett Wilson here. Their other second first round pick, number 10 overall, because he doesn't have to be Devontae Adams or Stephon Diggs, number one, but he's got to be a high-end receiver because Corey Davis needs to be a number two, Sam. That's where Corey's going to shine.
That's how you get to the Hall of Fame.
That's how you get to the Hall of Fame, as a high-end number two. He's got to play James Lofton or something, you know. He's got to be Alvin Harper. He's got to be a number two to those. So you need a number one, and it's got to be Garrett Wilson. And it allows Elijah Moore to be a 2/3. I mean, it makes everyone, it puts everybody into the proper slot, I would say, as far as the Jets receiving core, if Garrett Wilson becomes the true number one, because it's all about Zach Wilson and his development. There wasn't a lot of positive to take from Zach Wilson's season. It was a little bit better down the stretch than it was early on. You know, that's encouraging, but it doesn't, you know, we were also encouraged by Sam Darnold's like last four games of his rookie season. It doesn't really matter. There's got to be drastic improvement from Zach Wilson, and Garrett Wilson is the most important piece for inducing that drastic improvement from Zach Wilson.
I think he's a really important player. Sneakily, I think it's not even an off-season addition, really, but getting
Carl Lawson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They haven't had him yet, so technically it's an addition.
Addition by addition.
Yeah. We need to see what he is first, right? Yeah. He damaged his Achilles. He was another Achilles, right?
So he's had, like, since Auburn, maybe it might have even been his last year of high school, just a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
Big knee injuries and all that stuff. So,
and
Lawson being healthy is huge.
We said this with David Ajabo this year, but an Achilles is a really important injury for a pass rusher in particular. Guys that rely on that explosion off the line, you need your Achilles for that. So, first of all, we have to see, is Carl Lawson the same guy? But if he is, Carl Lawson is an elite level pass rushing force, and the Jets have needed those. That's why they drafted Jermaine Johnson. And if all of a sudden they can start to platoon those guys, Carl Lawson, John Franklin Myers, Jermaine Johnson, that, again, it's turning a weakness into a strength.
All right, let's wrap it up. Buffalo Bills. We usually start with the Bills. Spend 30 minutes on the Bills and then only 5 minutes on the other teams.
Yeah,
now
the
Bills.
Instead,
Bills are last.
We've gone last.
Most important addition, and why is it Von Miller? Or is it someone else?
Can we find anybody else that it makes sense? I mean,
Jamison Crowder.
Jamison Crowder.
He's going to replace Cole Beasley.
Punt God.
Yeah.
I think you can make that good argument. I think you can make an argument that Kyrie Elam is pretty important, given that Levi Wallace left town. He plugs straight in as a starter, and if he stinks, that's a problem.
I think you can make the argument that Elam's more important than Von Miller.
I think you can also make an argument that James Cook brings something to that offense that's different. And when you're already as good as Buffalo, so for most teams, adding a James Cook to the offense doesn't move the needle, right? When your needle is already redlining the way Buffalo's is, like the only thing that's going to move it is adding something that isn't there otherwise. And James Cook brings a skill set that isn't there in the backfield already. So he can add something to that group with, you know, give Josh Allen something else to work with that he hasn't had so far. So in almost, I think, maybe any other team, I would say James Cook really isn't moving the needle. But for Buffalo, he might.
Brandon Bean mentioned they were just trying to add some yak ability in the draft between James Cook and Khalil Shakir, the wide receiver out of Boise State. And it is interesting. That is kind of where the Bills are from a roster standpoint. They can go in and just target. We just want guys who are better after the catch. We have all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Right? We have good pass catchers. We have a great quarterback. The offensive line's in good shape. And we just want some yak in this draft. And that's why they attached James Cook and Khalil Shakir. So Kyir Elam, you can make the case that he's the most important player. Number two corner, opposite Tre'Davious White. If he's really good, this defense becomes really good. Now, it doesn't mean he's better than Von Miller as a player, but more important, I think you could definitely make that case. But Von's the guy they invested a ton of money in, and he kind of reversed his little decline down the stretch last year. Playoff Von showed up. So I'll go with Von Miller as the guy because he still has the ability to kind of take over games. And he's done it in the playoffs. He did it at times last year for the Rams, and he was a huge piece of their Super Bowl run.
Yeah, I think it's probably the right answer. What about replacing Brian Daboll? That's pretty important.
That is important. You know, we've talked about Mahomes and some of his turnover. Right, having different receivers and all that stuff, not having your offensive coordinator / the guy that helped turn you around, Josh Allen.
Now, again, we can't technically claim that one, right? Because it was an in-house promotion. They promoted Ken Dorsey rather than went outside the building, right? So it's only an elevation, not an addition.
Yeah, we also don't know how much. It's always tough to just when you're not in the building, like who actually was. Who deserves credit for Josh Allen?
Josh
Allen deserves some credit. Is it Daboll? Is it Ken Dorsey, who's been there since 2019 as QB coach?
Is it Jordan Palmer?
Is it Jordan Palmer in the offseason, right? Everybody wants to lay claim to the Josh Allen superstar rejuvenation. Is it you?
It's not. I don't think it's me. I don't.
You motivated him.
I motivated Brady. I don't think I motivated Josh
true.
Allen.
Yeah, you're definitely credit for Brady.
Yeah.
For sure.
Brady, something else came out recently about Brady, like, listening to all the hate, you know, like, listening to what people were saying and that motivating him. The man's, like, demented.
So he's never heard me speak.
I bet he has.
I'm just positive.
Yeah.
Tom's great.
You've been critical at times.
Yeah, of course. I mean, unbiased analyst here, you got to be critical when people deserve criticism.
Mm.
Have to do it. All right, is that all 32 teams? I don't think we forgot anybody.
Better be.
If we did...
It's your fault.
Sorry. Sam will get to it in 7 weeks when he gets back here.
No, you just have to deal with it without me. Okay. Deal with the hate.
Six shows without Sam, according to my calculation. Five shows. Where are we here?
Yeah, it should only be five, right?
Show, preview, 2022 plan. Five shows without Sam. Now, Rick Spielman this Thursday. Send your questions in. We'll have Greg Rosenthal next week, I hope. Should have this all locked in. We'll have Trevor Sikkema here talking, you know, good things about all your teams. And then let me know if there's a great guest We don't do average guests here. A great guest that you want to hear from. And be sure to follow all of Sam's exploits on the TikTok machine and all that fun stuff.
TikTok machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my pinned tweet has this photo on there, which will show you where the various social media accounts that this thing is going to be on. And the drivemenshealthforward.com is the link where you can donate to raise money for various cancer type support. But the social media things there are the important ones, because that's where we'll be posting photos, videos, stories of disasters and, you know, E-type Jags potentially being on the back of a AAA van for 700 miles or whatever needs to happen.
You got this.
Hey, look,
it's going to make it.
Hopefully.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Should be great. And we'll miss you over here, but we'll hold it down as best
good.
We can.
Don't
forget, NFL Pod, you get 25% off all off-season here. 25% off any PFF subscription over at PFF.com. Use the promo NFL Pod. Thanks to our sponsors, Sunday, Underdog Fantasy, taking us through the spring and the summer. We'll see you again here on Thursday, almost certainly with former Vikings GM Rick Spielman.
Almost certainly.
Don't look over.